This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
In a new story from Project Veritas, a whistleblower comes forward with emails showing that Pfizer doesn't want people to know that they are using fetal cells in the manufacturing of the vaccine. Now, we do know that many vaccines have used in the production of the vaccine fetal cells. They use them to replicate the viruses. I believe they're not in the vaccines themselves. But most reporting, we have this from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, says that it's just the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and other more traditional vaccines. But we've seen many pundits say that the Pfizer mRNA vaccine does not use fetal cells. Well, now we know they do. And this is a big deal for people who have religious exemptions and who are upset about this. And I think the other interesting thing about the story is that Pfizer knows it will be bad for them and their capitalistic agenda, I suppose, if people become aware that they use fetal tissue. We have a bunch of other stories as well. Sweden, Finland, Denmark are suspending use of the Moderna vaccine over myocarditis fears. And there is a major shortage of like everything and food prices are through the roof. So, oh man, we got a lot to talk about. But fortunately, somehow, I guess at the last minute, I get a text message that James O'Keefe is coming to my house. And I'm just like, what's happening? Surprise. So James is here.
Hello.
Thanks for coming, man.
Great to be here.
You got a big story and we'll get into all of it. I think pretty sure everybody knows who you are, but you are, you are someone with a very serious back disorder. You were born with two spines.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of the few remaining actual investigative journalists. And Shane, who is also here, who is running, you're running for the governor of Georgia as a libertarian.
Correct.
We were just discussing how you must have, you're barking up the tree of a lot of very powerful and wealthy individuals. And I can't imagine that is, I don't know. It's not nerve-wracking. Are you worried?
I try not to make decisions based upon fear, although, you know, we're all afraid, but I try not to let fear govern my decision-making.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming.
Great to
Shane,
be here.
Shane, do you want to briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thank you, guys. Super excited, I mean, to be here with, I mean, told me James was coming in on top of this thing today. I was just like, oh, my gosh, yeah. This is going to be amazing. But, yeah, I'm the libertarian that, quote-unquote, spoiled the Georgia race for the Republicans down there without spending a dime. And, you know, whether you're talking to Republicans or Democrats, they all hate or love me. And I wasn't even in the final race. But, yeah, I run the show Radical. And, man, I'm telling you what, I'm psyched to be able to do this kind of stuff with, you know, really. I mean, I look around this room right now. And I see guys, you know, 40-ish maybe, and they're changing the world. It's absolutely
I'm 35.
Amazing.
Okay.
Same.
You got to take off that hat sometime, brother.
Yeah. It's part of the show. Huh?
That's right.
We got Luke Rutkowski's hanging out.
I think the shirt I'm wearing is very appropriate for today's discussion. It has Mark Zuckerberg saying, I delete your post. Bezos saying, I delete your books. Wyszynski saying, I delete your videos. And, of course, Mr. Bill Gates saying, I delete you.
Yeah.
Which you can exclusively get on thebestpoliticalshirts.com. And I also released videos almost daily on youtube.com/wearechange. So thanks for having me.
We also got Lydia pressing all the buttons.
That's right. I'm along for this ride, and it's going to be wild tonight. I'm super excited to have James. He always has good stories, and Shane is fascinating running as a libertarian. So I'm looking forward to have what they both have to say tonight.
Before we get started, head over to TimCast.com, become a member. We're going to have a bonus members-only segment coming up. It usually drops around 11 or so p.m. And with your support, we are doing a bunch of amazing things. We got a couple nonprofits that are in the works, fact-checking the fact-checkers, and also building unbannable social media technology that anyone can implement using Fediverse Network and a bunch of really cool stuff. So you'll also get an ad-free experience and, of course, the members-only content. So don't forget to like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're just gonna get into it because, you know, it's a wild night. let me just start by saying that, you know, we had originally booked Shane to come on the show and, you know, just talk about the news and stuff. And then I get a text message because, you know, James just dropped this very big story about a whistleblower coming out from Pfizer. And we were like, okay, I guess we're going to just throw this thing together. But just to, I guess, not mince any words, do you want to tell us what this story's about?
Yeah, this is a whistleblower, current employee at Pfizer, Melissa is her name, and she took screenshots of some emails from executives at Pfizer, including Vanessa Gelman, Senior Director, Worldwide Research. And in these emails, the pharmaceutical executives say, quote, one or more cell lines with an origin that can be traced back to human fetal tissue has been used in laboratory tests associated with the vaccine program. Now, some of this is public knowledge in that fetal cells are used. But what's interesting about these emails is that all these executives at Pfizer are saying to each other, let's not tell people that that's true. And I'm going to quote the email here. Quote, we want to avoid having the information on fetal cells floating out there. We want to avoid, this is a direct quote, the risk of communicating this right now outweighs any potential benefit we see. And they say to hide this information public. So investigative reporting is always about making public what people want to keep secret. So my question is, why are these pharmaceutical executives in their emails trying so hard to keep this information secret? And this outraged the whistleblower so much that this woman went public yesterday night with Project Veritas on the record. She's currently employed by Pfizer. Probably the first time anyone has ever done this, sort of exposed the pharmaceutical industry. Everyone says I should be worried about this, but this whistleblower has informed me that a lot of people at Pfizer agree with her, and we're looking forward to more Pfizer employees coming out.
Now, here's the interesting thing. We have this, I pulled this up earlier in the day on a different segment, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, that says vaccine ingredients, fetal cells. And all of these, there's a whole bunch of articles that are like certified fact check say, no, there's no fetal cells in the vaccines. Don't worry about it.
Right.
No, the issue is they use them in manufacturing or the testing of the vaccine. So you're not getting injected with it. But in order to make them, to do the tests, they are using them. Now, there's a couple of really interesting things as it relates to your story. The first thing is this website from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia mentions that the Janssen vaccine, the J&J vaccine, does use viruses grown in fetal cells. But that's the only one. It doesn't mention Pfizer. So I don't think we had any confirmation that Pfizer was actually using fetal cells.
We do have states, and I'm reading from the state of California, says, quote, Pfizer does not require the use of any fetal cells in order to manufacture, produce the vaccine. So this would be a direct contradiction what the executives – yep, go ahead.
Well, in the manufacture of. This was in the lab tests.
Laboratory tests, yes.
So that's what I'm saying. I feel like, you know, one of the things I mentioned to people earlier in the day was – we're going to end up seeing a congressional hearing where you're going to get some Republican going like, what's this Project Veritas report I hear where you're using fetal cell tissues in the production of this vaccine? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, we do not use any fetal cells in any capacity manufacturing this vaccine. It is fake news. They're online conspiracies. Oh, we did do tests using them to get to the point where we could make the vaccine.
Laboratory tests.
Right.
So what you're saying is they're going to sort of do a non sequitur and say, well, we don't use it to put it in the vaccine that goes in your body. But two things can be true. They can use it in laboratory tests and also not use it in the production.
And they'll twist it. So
right.
I imagine this. You'll get a Rand Paul or whatever being like, we have a report from Veritas that laboratory tests in the production of the vaccine.
And they'll change the subject.
Exactly.
Right.
They'll change the subject and say, we do not manufacture the vaccine with fetal cells. That's not true. And then when the Republican, if any of the Republicans actually do question this, will either miss the manipulation or not have enough time to follow up. And that's the political game they'll play. So
right.
I do think it's particularly fascinating. But I will add, too, on top of all of that, just from this article from CHOP.edu, when they mention why they use fetal cells, this is what that really got me. They said it's because fetal cells can typically divide more times than any other cells. They say in fetal cells, it is around 50 divisions they can make. Other cells can only can divide substantially less because they're older cells.
Right.
So it sounds to me like it would just be an inconvenience to use cells that aren't from aborted fetal tissue, but they're making a cost-effective decision that it's cheaper and more effective.
Right, this is another quote from the email here from Vanessa Gelman, Senior Director of Worldwide Research. These are not low-level employees, Tim. Sometimes we get criticized for going after mid-level. No, these are high-level people here. Vanessa Gelman saying, quote, general members of the public who may take this information and use it in ways we may not want it out there. Avoid raising this as possible. What's interesting about these Pfizer emails is they also talk about Facebook. They say we don't want this information on Facebook, which is deeply ironic given all the censorship occurring about our videos are being taken off Facebook. So these executives are so concerned about people knowing this information that the cells are used in the development of the vaccine.
Man, it just makes me feel like these massive multinational corporations, elements in the government, big tech, they know that the masses, that the populace opposes this stuff. They know they have reason to fear. If people hear about this, they'll object to it. They know what they're doing violates the morals and ethics of regular people. And so they're like, just don't let them know about it.
Yep. Just hide it from them. But the good news, the silver lining in all this, in this dystopian reality is that, I find that, you know, when I met with you a year ago, we talked about this vision to manifest, you know, hundreds of whistleblowers. These days, they're all, I mean, I'm talking tens of thousands of people have messaged me in the last few weeks. So it's all happening. It's happening. Because there's no place else for them to go. And it's getting worse and worse, that divergence between reality and what's presented on CNN. It's just that's getting wider of a gap.
Seeing the people chanting, "Let's go, Brandon," all over the place.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a funny thing, but there's regular people at a Jets game, at a football game.
Well, just take a look at what is it, the Fauci documentary that's coming out on Disney, right? I mean, and you see the trailer for it on YouTube, and it's got, I don't know, 7,000 thumbs up, and it's got 75,000 disapproval thumbs down. Like, that's a really good moment for people in America who are like, you know what, maybe we should be talking about mandates versus, you know, absolutely the government not having this power.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful. We talked about this the other day, about getting wrapped up into, like, discussions about exemptions, because we should be just saying no mandates, period.
Yep.
Because I think the any argument that says there are some mandates that are some of the times, as long as we have exemptions, results in a social credit system. But, you know.
Well, in my opinion, the vaccine passport is not going to lead to a social credit score, because it already is a social credit score. It's already the score of compliance that people have to jump through. They know that there's going to be a third one. They know that it's going to be a fourth one. And there's not even a conversation when this is going to end. Usually with the lockdown, usually with a policy that's very intrusive in our lives, the government comes out and says, we're going to end this after this many people die from COVID, after these many cases. We don't have any of that. We don't have any conversation to when this will end, when this will stop, and it's not going to stop
ever. It's the new Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Mm. That's the thing, is there's no mission. There's never been a mission over there. I mean, what we've been talking about with the Afghan papers for, 20 years, right?
Oh, yeah.
No mission. We're still sending guys outside the wire. It's a never-ending mission, and this is the same thing. It's like there is no end in sight ever.
I think the big issue here is with James's story. You've got a lot of people who have filed for religious exemptions, and they've been denied. Now, first and foremost, like I said, we'll be careful. I want to make sure we're very clear. We should be saying outright, no vaccine mandates, period. Regardless, we shouldn't be demanding papers. It's between the person and their doctor. If you want to go and seek medical help, it's between you and your doctor, not us here on the internet or your business or the government. Now you have, government officials and businesses with no regard for your private health matters. And on top of that, imagine you're in New York City where they mandate this. And you've got some embarrassing medical condition. And now you've got to go around every business exposing this embarrassing condition that should be private matter for you to live your life with dignity. That's another reason why I'm just like, they're demanding IDs at the door. That being said, this is, I think, a lawsuit winner for people who have religious, who want to assert religious exemptions.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no religious exemptions at Pfizer for this, what this insider came forward regarding. So I think it's a game changer for society. It's just, we live in this dystopian reality where these facts are just not even accepted. I mean, things have changed so quickly, even since I last saw you. I mean, in a just world, this would be on the front page of the New York Times and on 60 Minutes. These are executive emails at Pfizer.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm pretty sure everyone else was pissed off equally as much by the same thing when you see the fake whistleblower from Facebook, and not a single whistleblower that Veritas has come out with is going to be propped up on 60 Minutes and given this airtime.
Right. That was the Morgan Common at Facebook blew the whistle on the vaccine hesitancy scores, and he responded to Blumenthal from Connecticut, saying there should be more people inside tech. But the whistleblower inside Facebook, the supposed whistleblower, wanted more censorship.
Yeah. I mean, not even that. I mean, look at Assange. Look at Snowden. I mean, these people are still in exile. Assange is in jail. His accuser, who lied about the main witness that the government had against him, was caught lying. He was just arrested in Iceland just moments ago, and Assange is still in jail? How does that make sense? It doesn't.
Well,
power. Yeah. Those are the real whistleblowers. And then there's whistleblowers that work towards the agenda and the narrative that, of course, they keep, and they make prominent number one news articles on CNN that they promote nonstop. And I really wanted to talk to you, James, specifically, because I know you've got deleted a whole bunch of places. I try to share your video on Twitter today, and it said, you're spreading disinformation. And I'm like, wait, what? I clicked on the link, and it gave me some rambling, jumbling nonsense that didn't even address the claims you were making, right? But you couldn't like it. You couldn't comment?
Right.
You couldn't do anything about it. So how has it been using alternatives? How have your numbers, dwindled? Have your numbers got higher? Mm-hmm. How's the fight with online censorship? Because they're going after you pretty hard.
Well, and Eric's in the room with me. I mean, we've gotten the most watched views ever. Mm. And we've trended on Twitter. Think of it. I've trended on Twitter, and Veritas has trended on Twitter for each and every story we've broke.
Yep.
And I'm banned from Twitter, and I'm suing Twitter. I mean, you can't make that shit up.
Yep.
The reason why is because of distribution by proxy. So it doesn't matter, like, if I get banned and he gets banned and the third guy will upload the video and I text message a click to tweet link like I sent to you. And you can click on it and it'll embed the video, populate. Now, they'll try to censor it and do things, but for the most part, they haven't taken me down. I have actually sent a letter to Mark Zuckerberg this week saying, please do ban me. I want you to ban me. Cut my tongue out of my mouth on the eve of the release of the whistleblower, and it'll only make people want to tune in to see what they have to say. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaning into the censorship. I'm willing to lose everything. And I think you have to be. But every video that we've done, Eric is in the room. He's the guy who does social media with Veritas. Every video we've done has gotten millions of views on YouTube and on Twitter over the last few releases. So I'm hopeful, as long as the content is strong enough and true. Now, I'm not opining on the vaccine. I'm not even going to tell you my opinion about it. I'm just showing facts. And because I've sued the New York Times and sued Twitter and sued CNN, there's a part of me that feels these companies are actually afraid of me. By violating their own rules, by crossing some Rubicon they haven't yet crossed. So far, yes, they'll add the little tags and advertisements under the video, but they haven't taken us down.
Yeah, I remember it was very difficult to share your video, and I was just wondering, you know, what's going to happen from here. But seeing all the alternatives, seeing a lot of different platforms jump up, seeing all the individual people kind of rise up, seeing the 75,000 dislikes on the Dr. Fauci documentary, seeing the chants everywhere, I mean, how can you not have hope? And when the reality gets so skewed on the mainstream media by the government, by the corporations, where literally Joe Biden was claiming that the unvaccinated are the ones putting the economy at risk today. Mm-hmm. That was literally what he was saying.
Well, something interesting happened to me. A lot of people were posting that when they tried to put the link up to the story, they were getting warnings on Facebook.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yes. I wish I had these messages in front of me. I've seen all types of weird. In fact, Eric, it seems like they were actually manufacturing custom messages just for me.
Oh. It's like, nice.
And you used to be able to ratio people on Twitter, right? So,
right.
So we have, 600,000 people on Telegram. So if I just post the URL of the guy on Twitter, like making some boneheaded comment, they get ratioed. Twitter disabled people from doing that now. You can't ratio people. So they're customizing the interface so that you're not allowed.
They're trying to hide it. Did you know that there's a website tracking likes and dislikes on Joe Biden's videos showing that they erase dislikes?
Yeah.
But here's what I was going to say. So whenever I hear that there's censorship on Facebook, I immediately am like, all right, try me. And I don't know. I've had no problem posting the stories on Facebook. They've not been deleted. I've given no warnings.
Facebook is really screwed up.
Here's one. Russell Brandon, blue check mark. Project Veritas is taking the exciting leap from mostly harmless bullshit to bullshit that will actively cause people to die. I sent this URL to 500,000 people, but if you go to his Twitter page, you can't comment on him unless Russell Brandon is mentioned. So they're taking steps to eliminate this, but again, it wasn't my claim. I'm quoting Pfizer executives. You understand the distinction? Like, I'm not opining about what I think about the virus or
it's emails in writing.
I'm quoting their vice president saying we must lie to the people. We must deceive the people. This is the law of non-contradiction. You shouldn't lie to people. Whether you're left, right, Republican, Democrat, it doesn't, you shouldn't lie.
Well, I was actually just talking to Sean Spicer on Newsmax about they edited Joe Biden's comments because he made this snide comment where, like, you know, when cinema gets harassed, doesn't happen to people with Secret Service. and so he's saying NBC reports this comment, but they cut out that part. So you don't get the full context. It's deceptively edited. My immediate reaction was like, oh, I love it. They deceptively edit their videos. And then they can write all day about how James O'Keefe is doing that when he's showing you people literally say things in a conversation.
Oh, I have one quick story, Luke, about something you said about censorship. So one of the things they do, which I know you're familiar with, is they use these fact checkers, you know, like fact check or experts say story has been debunked. I love that one. Experts say. It's like, imagine if you're someone who walks on in on you cheating on your wife. You say, "I'm sorry, honey. Experts say this has been debunked." But anyways, the USA Today, what they do is they work with Facebook to do a fact check, right? So that they can put out a piece that's used to justify to get your thing banned on Facebook. So Facebook can say, "Well, experts say USA Today." So USA Today called me, Tim, after the first video, the HHS whistleblower on our series 2 weeks ago. And I said, "Oh, here we go again. USA Today's setting this up." So I don't know what to do, because no matter what I say, it doesn't matter. They've already written their article. They're just asking me for comment. So what I did is I called USA Today and I recorded myself leaving a voicemail for USA Today. And then I distributed my comment to USA Today to everyone, preempting them, saying, "If you don't publish my comment, I will sue you." USA Today did not put out the article.
Whoa.
And then Facebook didn't take the article down. So I think the way to preempt communists, because we're dealing with, let's just call it what it is, communism. The way to preempt communists is to publicly announce what they're going to do. Record yourself giving the comment. "Here, world, I'm giving my comment to USA Today. Here is my comment. If you don't publish this, I'm going to sue you." And they know I'm not bluffing. So USA Today didn't publish that article, and Facebook didn't take us down.
It's what we mentioned before about, you know, in a previous segment, we were just talking about Congress questioning someone from, you know, Pfizer about fetal tissues. The fact checkers do the same game. Someone will make an assertion, and then the fact checkers will take a similar but different claim to make it sound like they're debunking the claim. So next thing you know, we're going to see Snopes saying our fetal, you know, the claim, a Project Veritas story releases a bombshell. People are now saying, see, non sequitur.
Yes, non sequitur, logical non sequitur. It's not so much that they're lying. It's the logical non sequitur. It's the fallacious logic. They change the subject and then there's this game of telephone. And before you know it, O'Keefe made a claim that I did not make that claim. That's brilliant.
That's the funniest thing about, I think, almost all of the work you do is when you put these videos out, you're not saying, "I believe in this policy and that policy and I voted for Bush." Like none of those things happen.
Right. Yeah, they'll make it's a straw man argument. Effectively, it's what it is. Straw man.
Can you guys just sue Wikipedia already?
We're working on it. We're going to sue the users on Wikipedia. And since I last saw you, as you know, we defeated the New York Times motion to dismiss. The New York Times appealed that, tried to issue an emergency stay so that we couldn't depose them. We defeated their emergency stay. So we're getting pretty far in our lawsuit. Obviously, the wheels of justice turn slowly. But I think it has deterred them, Tim, from lying.
How you launched that thing recently, the defense fund, I think?
Yes, Project Veritas Legal Organization, which is under our 501c3. It was your idea, actually, the People's Defamation Defense Fund. We just named it Project Veritas Legal.
Nice.
So you stole my idea and renamed it. How's
it going? Well, technically it was my idea, but don't worry about that.
It was your idea.
Yeah. Either way, it's amazing that that's happening. We need more of that. And I would say what you're doing is not even controversial. It's just journalism. It's what journalism used to be. A lot of journalism what we see right now is literally regurgitating what the power structure says and then saying, "Now do this." You don't even tell people what to do. I mean, you have your own personal opinions. You have your own biases. Everyone has their own biases. But there's a big distinction between what we're seeing in the mainstream media and what we're seeing with alternative media, what we're seeing with you. And I think we need more of that more than ever. And then I'm just trying to think of other ways maybe we could help facilitate that or get involved in that.
I think journalism is reluctant to get into an exposed position where they're seeing as affecting events and rather than just reporting to them. And traditionally, there was always this adversarial nature to journalism, but these days, like you say, they only print the established line. They only are allowed to publish what they're told on the record. In fact, quote-unquote journalists wait to see what the corporation has to say, and only when they've been given permission to report the thing do they report the thing. Yeah. It's become so much worse even in the last couple of years. They don't publish anything that's not the established public line.
CNN's health advisor just came out today and said Los Angeles has just invoked some of the strictest vaccine policies in the United States excellent. This needs to spread everywhere. That's not journalism. That's CNN hiring a lunatic,
yes,
sociopathic, crazy person that wants to enforce their will onto you. Journalism is about letting people hear the story, letting them decide themselves, letting them see the evidence, and then just leaving it there for the viewer to decide what is right for them. Informed consent, something that, again, needs to come back more than ever. And I would say we don't have any of it.
I think these people are so fundamentally unaligned even on the First Amendment these days. And there's this great reporter named David Shaw who wrote, "I'm a great believer in the reporter as an observer. First-hand observation is the ultimate documentation. Almost every big story that we do, we often have to impersonate someone in order to have the first-hand observation of the thing happening. That's what investigative journalism does. You use whistleblowers, you go undercover, et cetera, et cetera." So this is the perversion. The perversion I've seen is that they won't say anything unless the corporation or government official tells them you're allowed to say this.
We've had several segments talking about the reporting you've done and Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So when I pull up the Wikipedia,
oh, it's horrible.
For Project Veritas.
Oh, it's beyond. It's
ridiculous.
It's insane. But I'm going to read some because it's important. They say Project Veritas is an American far-right activist group founded by James O'Keefe. Oh. The group produces deceptively edited videos of its undercover operations, which use secret recordings in an effort to discredit mainstream media organizations and progressive groups. Project Veritas also uses entrapment to generate bad publicity for its targets and has propagated disinformation and conspiracy theories in its videos and operations. Now, there's a couple things I want to say. All of the citations on this are opinion pieces.
Yes. Yes.
Wikipedia is an encyclopedia, it says.
Hmm.
Yet this whole article has taken random opinions. And it was funny because I was looking at the talk section of Wikipedia where the editors talk. And someone said, "Why are we using all of these op-eds? It's not
And what was the response to that guy?
Oh, they get shut down in 2 seconds.
Oh.
But you want to know, this is why I just said to you, I want you to sue Wikipedia. Because there's something very important right above that paragraph I just read.
Yeah.
It says, "from Wikipedia."
Oh.
It doesn't say "from user catlover42. It doesn't say "from JohnnyBGood900. It doesn't say "from We Are Change." It says "from Wikipedia" right here.
They banned me on Wikipedia, so I'm not on there.
That's fair.
It says.
they said "from Wikipedia." What do you mean "from Wikipedia"?
It says at the top of the site, "Project Veritas, from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, Project Veritas is..." If they're asserting the statements have come from themselves.
That's a good point.
It doesn't matter. So I'll put it this way. We launched TimCast.com. We got a bunch of users. It's going really well. We have journalists. Could I take random comments from users, quote block the text, and then put it in an article that says from TimCast or from Tim Pool,
right.
And then assert, oh, it's user-generated content. We're 230 protected. No, I've put my byline on it. Wikipedia has asserted this is their statements from them.
Yes.
Now, if they can remove that, but I think as long as that exists and they have asserted this on this page about Veritas, nowhere does it say the statements came from any journalists, any writers, any pundits, opinion people, or users. It only says from Wikipedia.
I think that's a great fact. I will talk to my lawyers about that, but I do intend to sue Wikipedia in some way, matter, shape, or form. And I will do that, whether it's the users, the website, we'll do it. But it's very important your audience understand this. I know you do. You said they're all citing opinion pieces. And that in the New York Times lawsuit, Tim, the New York State Supreme Court judge actually said how deceptive it was for the New York Times reporter to mask a first sentence of the article and defended it saying, "That's my opinion." And that was deceptive, and that was disinformation. The judge actually said it was disinformation for the New York Times to call it an opinion when it was used to justify all types of other things. But they use supposition. They use circular sources. This is the way the propaganda works. I admire these writers on Wikipedia and the New York Times. You have to be an artist to paint reality in the way that they do. It's any time I aim a camera in any direction, it will contradict what you see on that page. And that's why people are so pissed off. That's why the whistleblowers are coming out because, listen, people are willing to give up their livelihoods right now.
Yep.
I've spent my whole life effectively doing this since I was in college for, 15, 16 years. And you might have one or two people a year that say, "Okay, I'll do it." Right now, 10,000 people are willing to do it. That's the silver lining. People are waking up, and sometimes maybe it has to be darkest before the light.
You know, when I was looking at the Pfizer scientist's video you did, It some of them seemed like you had that one guy. I think his name was Nick Carl, right?
Yep.
And he seemed like he was reveling in it. Yeah, mandate it, do it. But yeah. One of those guys, I think the guy's name was Chris or whatever, yeah. Seemed kind of like, I know what's going on is bad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a fan of this.
But they're not willing to.
Nobody wants to stick their neck out.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to take the responsibility of what it means that they're a snowflake contributing to this avalanche.
Yeah, we talked about this last time. It takes a lot of courage to stick your neck out. But in the 20th century, people didn't really have as many options. And these days, that you know, you can put a GoFundMe because they banned us on GoFundMe.
Give, send, go.
Raising yes. $500,000 per whistleblower. $500,000 for whistleblower now at Project Veritas.
I'd say, I think, what, like 10 years ago, that was near retirement funds, but now with inflation through the roof, you're lucky to buy a
cheeseburger. And one more comment I want to make about how journalism has changed. I'm seeing this a new phenomenon occur. The mainstream media will now not reveal newsworthy information due to the, quote, harm the information might inflict on the subject exposed. Remember the communist teacher thing we did a month ago, Gabriel Gipe in California?
Yeah.
With the hammer and sickle?
Yeah.
This guy was saying, talking about child abuse and we need to scare the F out of kids. And a lot of the people in Sacramento had to report on this because he was fired. So they had to report the news. But one of the refrains was, they're not going to mention the name of the teacher. Listen to this, quote, teacher whose name we are not disclosing due to potential harm against him.
Wow.
So this is a new phenomenon in journalism. We're not going to reveal newsworthy information because the person might be harmed. Same thing with the FBI.
Right.
Or, you know, these parents might do harm to the teachers.
Well, actually, this is fascinating. One of the core journalistic ethics is minimize harm.
Right.
But they only are now applying it. You take a look at CNN when they were like, here's the name of the man who posted the Nancy Pelosi video. Here's where he works.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maximizing harm against those who speak out against their political ideology. In this instance, we're not going to reveal who this person is. I'll give you a really, really good example of how this is manipulative in the mainstream press. Andy Ngo. He goes out and he reports on Antifa violence and extremism. He goes on Twitter and he posts photos of the people arrested at these extremist events. The left says he's making kill lists. He's secretly working with the far right. And then their allies in media regurgitate the lies. Ryan Riley of the Huffington Post has been doing literally the exact same thing about the January 6th defendants. Mm-hmm. They cheer him on as an intrepid and amazing journalist doing the good work of exposing the extremists. As far as I'm concerned, both of them are doing journalism by saying, here's the guy who was charged, here's why he was charged. I'm fine with either. But you can see how the political ideologies, and you can see how the mainstream media is willing to support one and oppose the other.
It's the murder cult. You can't attack the murder cult. And that's the thing, is like you look at everyday regular people and their businesses, their homes, their property, their livelihoods. The government doesn't care about that.
Oh, they've been decimated.
But if you go after those guys on the shiny white Capitol Hill, you invade their space. And let's face it, like those guys, they've got more ammunition and firepower in their trucks that they left behind and they didn't bring in there. And
like the FBI said, there was no plan.
There was a bunch
of raucous people who rioted. It was bad. Like we all, yeah, okay, it was bad.
It's not cool. Yeah, I mean,
but you have now stories that they don't track the leftist violence in the same way they do the right. You have the hearings about how the right is substantially worse. This is the fascinating thing. I want to loop this back to how they frame Veritas on Wikipedia. A far right. What does that even mean when they call you far right?
I'm beside myself. Like I said, in the beginning of my career, I used to fret and have sort of PTSD over the Wikipedia page. I've come to accept it. The moment you stop giving a shit about what they think of you and stop seeking their approval is the moment when you become truly free. I've learned this in my life. It's just I have to accept the unacceptable. To be labeled far right, I literally don't express my opinion in any – I've never expressed my opinion in any of the investigations I've ever done. And all they do on television is express their opinion. I don't see anything but them express their opinion. It's Orwell's, 1984 doublethink. Yeah. There.
Well, at least you haven't been unpersoned. On Wikipedia, they literally unpersoned
Why
me.
Why did they do that?
Because I was exposing the Russian hoax right when it was, the most prominent in the mainstream media. They were saying there's clear Russian collusion, Russia hacked the election, they helped Donald Trump win, and I'm like, no, that didn't happen. Where's the evidence? We don't see any evidence. I don't believe in this story. And because of that, Wikipedia, there was some editor that wrote, well, even though they do newsworthy stuff, like get on Epstein's Island, friend or talk to this politician or talk to this whistleblower. We're going to refrain from even naming them in any future Wikipedia entries. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, who's this random user? I forgot the user's name, but just completely unpersoned me from Wikipedia. I don't even exist on that platform the last time I looked. So there's many different ways that they try to go after you. A lot of times they try to silence you. A lot of times they attack you. And I think they have to use both, because they know if they just attack, they sometimes make people grow as well.
Right. They don't want to mention, like Voldemort, right, mm-hmm. Mario? They can't mention us by name. Or, you know, so, I mean, far right. I don't, and of course, there's probably like how many citations, footnotes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, there's like all these opinion pieces they're citing after that word.
Wikipedia, so. Have you seen the Larry Sanger? We had him on the show once. He was one of the, he's one of the mm-hmm. co-founders of Wikipedia, and he said it's just leftist propaganda at this point. It's crazy. I used to donate to Wikipedia. I was such a big fan. This idea of the community coming together and being like, let's get some good, reliable sources. But I'll tell you this. Even, it's fascinating to me. When I look at Media Matters, for instance, Media Matters is literally an activist organization. I mean, I'm not exaggerating or trying to insult them. They're an organization that scours right-wing content or whatever you want to call it and then disparages them. They've made up things on numerous occasions, and NewsGuard, which is, I believe, funded by Microsoft, is they're green check mark. All good.
Speaking of Media Matters, this is a Media Matters headline last week. YouTube is taking a victory lap for its latest vaccine misinformation policy. Meanwhile, Project Veritas is gaining millions of views on YouTube for quoting people. So Media Matters is doing the yeoman's work of trying to get us banned for doing investigative reporting.
I think you should sue NewsGuard.
NewsGuard?
Yeah. So we use NewsGuard specifically because I consider it a check on our bias. Mm-hmm. So NewsGuard is a fact check. It's a rating agency. They have a 10-point system, a 100-point system, and Veritas has a 57 out of 100 in their scoring system. They say the website fails to adhere to several basic journalistic standards.
Which are those?
They say you do not gather and present information responsibly. You do not handle the difference between news and opinion responsibly.
Really?
You don't disclose ownership and financing. And you don't provide the names of your creators along with either contact or biographical.
How do they erase the big propagandas, right? That's what I would say.
You know what's funny? I've never lost a lawsuit. Project Veritas has won every single lawsuit.
Yep.
And I will give $10,000 to any human being who can name one deceptive edit in the last decade of my life. No one can do it. But they just keep saying I doctor tapes. I mean, it's become so cliche to say 1984. It doesn't even mean anything anymore, but it's like the double think, you know, to tell deliberate lies while genuinely believing them, to forget any fact that becomes inconvenient and to draw it back from oblivion when it becomes necessary to do so, to deny the existence of objective reality. It is what they do. And I keep saying this, it's just pissing everyone off such that there's going to be an uprising.
Here's how it works. Luke and I are sitting here. I report, there is a rose quartz crystal ball here on the table.
Right.
Luke then reports, you know, Tim Pool is lying. It's actually a fluorite crystal ball. What happens then is you, as the fact checker, can say either one of us is the liar, depending on which idea you want to support. So when I'm looking at the NewsGuard for Veritas, they mentioned that you featured a postal worker named Richard Hopkins.
Right.
Now, you actually did a story where he made claims, where he said things.
That's right.
And you reported those things.
That's right.
The mainstream media then called you a liar. They've decided the mainstream media's claims are more valid than yours, thus you're not telling the truth, when they're literally trying to decide between two people who've made a statement.
Just to say a word about that postal worker, Richard Hopkins, the Washington Post, Richard Hopkins was interrogated by federal agents. And Richard Hopkins, we had a recording of his interrogation. We published the recording. And then somehow the Washington Post was leaked statements by the federal agents. Well, there's only two federal agents in the room, and I know they're both of their names. And the federal agents made claims that contradicted the recording. And the Washington Post reports anonymously sourced the people in the room. So they say, and then CNN said, well, credible sources say. And I said, well, I have the damn recording. I have the recording. Rock beat scissors. I have the recording. Well, but then and Jacob Bagaj of CNN, literally you could see the condescending smugness in his face when he goes on Anderson Cooper and says, credible sources like the Washington, Well, I have a recording of what transpired. So they're credible by virtue of their own decree that they are indeed credible. And it's a self-anointed racket.
And they don't
care.
So
this needs to go in front of a judge, is what I'm saying. When NewsGuard now says you are not credible because the Washington Post has, with anonymous sources, challenged your actual recordings, it needs to get it to a judge where the judge can determine, is this defamation or is this libel? It's written.
I was just emailing my colleague this, and we did indeed send a demand for a correction to NewsGuard, to Peggy Ackerman, senior editor at NewsGuard, and we're in process of that. And Tim, I have to sue a lot of people.
I know.
I've been suing. I mean, I'm suing Twitter, CNN, New York Times, and we're winning, you know, all the lawsuits. It's just like I think that, Luke, your idea, People's Defamation Defense Fund, mm-hmm. there needs to be 100 people suing the New York Times for defamation. We got to find the right plaintiffs, the right set of facts to get past motion to dismiss, which is a very difficult burden to get past, Tim. But I agree with you, and I will sue NewsGuard if they don't correct.
We are entering a new era of dystopian BS. Check out the story we got from Axios. Google and YouTube will prohibit ads on monetization on climate denial content. Look, we've talked about this with Chris Martinson. I think, you know, at least I genuinely believe we've got very serious environmental crises on this planet. Climate change, dead zones, fishery collapse, Pacific garbage gyre, all that stuff. But man, is it a messed up world when they're coming out right telling you that there is no more, the internet, it's no more. You are a pleb. You are never supposed to be given the ability to speak through the megaphone, and they're going to be taking that away regardless of whether you're right or wrong.
Now, it's also important to note here, are they stopping people from climate change denier or stopping people who are calling out a lot of the hypocrisies in the climate change movement? Because there's a lot of hypocrisies. See, it's very vague, generalized language that gets bastardized and abused so much because, again, the rules aren't really that clear on YouTube. We don't know the exact parameters. We don't know the exact words. Sometimes you say the magic special words, your videos get taken down without even an explanation. Sometimes my videos just get taken down, just like yours, Tim, without even a notice, without even a notification. So with stuff like that happening, seeing the spectrum just being broadened, like now it's this, and now it's this, and now it's that. Like, where do you end? Where do you even start? We don't. I mean, if you're going to give guidelines, give clear guidelines. Let's give clear protocols. If you deny this specific assessment or argument, I mean, that in itself is anti-scientific. You should be able to argue. You should be able to have a conversation. And if you can't question the science, it's not science, it's propaganda. And I think people need to realize that more than ever.
They can't control people that way. And that's the problem, is this isn't meant for debate. This isn't meant for us to sit here and have a reasonable conversation. This is meant to silence people and control people. This is the state. This has always been the state. Centralization is, if we can control the narrative, we can control what is said, and we can control the people. And at the end of the day, that's what the state does. It centralizes power, and it controls people.
I think they've lost control. I think the heavy-handedness we're seeing of the federal government, the desperate maneuvers they're making, yeah, is just a sign that they're desperately trying to assert they have control, but more and more just expose the emperor's not wearing any clothes.
Do you think this is mostly brought on by the invention of blockchain and immutable content and social media?
I think the internet in general, it was a ticking time bomb that, you know, they used to control the flow of information perfectly. You had a handful of channels where information could come from. If you were a journalist with a big story, they'd look at you and say, "Nah, we're not interested." Now you have the ability to go online and, like James with Telegram, put out a message where people can just click the link and then it goes up on other social media platforms.
Yeah, I think we're building our own audience, Veritas, for the first time. I mean, that's what strikes me as I think this is an age where the loss of one's Twitter account is treated like the loss of one's life. But there's no, I'm not getting any coverage on these stories, but everyone's coming to Veritas to be informed. That's a new phenomenon. So in the past, my model was to try to get local news outlets to cover these stories. But the pharmaceutical industry, you kidding me? There's actually one local TV station in Kansas that may cover it only because that's where the plant where the woman works and they have to. But, I think there's this phenomenon where our audience aren't necessarily Fox News viewers, Tim. Neither are yours. So just a new audience. We're informing people one by one. And then another thing I get is, well, nothing's going to change. Nothing ever happens to these people, like a cynicism. And I've said this to a couple people. I said, well, listen, You got to start somewhere. You change one life, you can change the whole world. You can convince a few people, you can make a big difference. But I think the phenomenon with Project Veritas is that we're building this new audience of people who are being informed because it's incontrovertible, videotaped evidence. Yeah. It's not my opinion. It's incontrovertible.
While the machine is very clearly clamping down on what is acceptable language, they are clearly violating the good spirit of Section 230. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're setting forth editorial guidelines. That's what it is. When they tell you your opinion is not allowed to be spoken, they're saying here are the editorial guidelines of this platform.
Well, it's even questions. And I mean, that's what it gets down to is you may not make statements. You may just be asking questions like, hey, what about solar, you know, solar and space weather? Do we ever talk about the solar energy that's coming out of the sun in terms of its fluctuations? We never talk about that. Do we have an answer for what the ideal temperature of Earth is? Nobody can answer that. It's been decades and decades and decades since I was a kid. I mean, I remember them talking about a coming ice age in the 80s and thinking, oh my God, you know, I was terrified. And that was the thing. It was like live in fear, no matter what it was. And listen, as a conservationist, I know very well that when we look at the Earth, we should be living in more of a balance. But this cry for like the balance in the ecosystem and this, I don't know, this idea that we can not say some things about, you know, climate change. Well, this cry comes from a lot of people who live in cities which have absolutely destroy the natural environment.
I think back to, you know, 20 or so years ago, where was the right? They absolutely denied climate change, right?
Yeah.
Now they typically accept climate change, but say, you know, they don't believe it's man-made, or their arguments about the solutions posed by the left are wrong. One at a time, the arguments from the right veer leftward as time goes on. The Republican Party isn't actually making demands of the legislature, repealing things, for instance. I've had conservatives say to me, well, look, we're not going to do what the left does and force the government to do things. No. Repeal laws. Repeal the NFA. How about that one? No,
why?
They don't do that either.
Why not?
I don't know, because they're the uniparty and the Republicans.
Controlled opposition.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell goes, I'm going to hold off the Democrats for about 2 weeks and then agree with them. That's what happens. He says, I'm fighting with the Democrats. And then 2 weeks later, he goes, okay, we've come to an agreement. And people keep voting for the guy.
Yeah, they just wait for the next major news story, ramp it up to 10, and then leave it.
I believe and genuinely feel a lot of the people in the Republican Party have Stockholm Syndrome and secretly want to be liked by the people that they're supposedly against. Like, yep. I mean, I don't know, maybe they want their book reviewed by the New York Times. They want to play on their turf. They secretly wish they were at that Met Gala with AOC. They want to be there. They wish they were part of that crowd. I really do. I think that's
absolutely
the problem. They want to be liked.
They care more about the opinion of the New York Times than their own constituents.
Yes. Well, and the moment you stop caring is when you can actually have the will to win and be effective. But that's a psychological issue, a hurdle for people who are not part of the so-called mainstream power structure. It's hard, even for me. I mean, I've you know, gotten my desire for approval down to a microscopic, you know, bead. But
you get more approval because of
it. You'd have to be a sociopath to want to be hated by everybody. But if you want to do the things that you're proposing, you're going to be hated by a lot of people who have the power to make you liked. And I have to be prepared to lose. I mean, I just passed 1 million followers on Instagram this week. And I mean, on YouTube, we went from 1 million to 1.25 million subs in like no time. And I see your gold plaque. They have not sent me one of those gold plaques yet.
I never got mine.
It's sitting in bubble wrap. Don't send that out to Veritas.
Well, hold on. Here's what I'll do. So when you get those awards, those gold and silver awards,
yeah,
they allow you to do a team purchase. So if multiple people work on your team, you can order a custom award with any name on it from the company. So I think good old team members, Project Veritas and We Are Change, are going to be getting, you know, their awards.
I just think it's funny that we have 1.3 mil subs and our gold plaque is sitting in the bubble wrap room at in Google in California. And it's like sitting half open. Like the manager's like, well, you know, let's just verify that those 1.3 million subs are all real people. It's under some footnote, you know. But I think that the bottom line is, I'm going to see it over and over. This is my mantra today. The moment you stop giving a shit and seeking their approval is the moment you're free to actually be effective. You have to not care. At the first line on your Wikipedia, it says far right criminal doctors tapes. It hurts, but you just gotta let it go. Because if you do the thing that you're proposing, you're running for office, aren't you?
Yeah.
God bless you. I'm never gonna run for office my whole life.
It's the most
I could never do that job.
Thing ever.
I can't do it, but we need good people, so thank you. I hope you're successful in your efforts. You have to not give a shit what they think. You just have to do the right thing and have a leap of faith. And one of the things that struck me about the HHS whistleblower and the Pfizer whistleblower is I asked them, aren't you afraid of going after Pfizer? And they both said effectively, I put my faith in God, not in man. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a religious person or not, they're taking a leap of faith.
Yeah.
They're saying, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to do the right thing, damn it. And I just think that that's what people need to do if they're going to want to change things.
I 99.9% agree with you on what you said about not caring, but I'm going to offer up a little different.
Go ahead.
See, I do care what they write on my Wikipedia, because for a long time they claimed on Wikipedia that I invented a live streaming Zeppelin. I don't understand why they think I, Tim Pool, and I was working with drones that I get. And I think one of my
live streaming what?
Zeppelin.
What do you
like
mean?
A blimp.
A blimp.
Like, they claimed I had a blimp.
Why would they want
to claim
such a thing?
So cool.
I don't know! And it was in my Wikipedia for years.
Is that supposed to be defamatory? A blimp?
No. But here's the funny thing. I am so fed up with, like, when I read your Wikipedia, I'm like, that is obviously, listen, even if it was true, they're opinion pieces that don't tell us what your organization is. And I'm sick of it. So here's what I'm doing. Okay. Here's what we are doing. After a few years of them claiming that I invented some kind of Zeppelin and me saying publicly, like, guys, I did not do this. Please remove it. And they're like, you're not a credible source. You can't be used. They finally took it out. And I said, you know what I'm going to do now? I'm actually going to invent the damn thing. So they'll have to put it back in. I'll retroactively make their so that's the game I'm playing. So we actually have it. The Zeppelin is near completion, and we're going to be launching it. We're going to get a pilot with certification, and we are going to have the live streaming Zeppelin, and then they're going to have to go back and change the whole thing all over again, because now it's true.
Now, it's brilliant. I can't wait to see that. Brilliant. I want to be a part of that. But James, you brought up a very important point, and if I could kind of surmise it a little bit, it would be that words only have power when you give them power. And I think we're really seeing a lot of crazy, ridiculous words out there to the point where everyone's laughing at the establishment. I mean, Wolf Blitzer, he posted this photo of himself, and he looks like a geriatrics bald eagle.
And he is.
And he wrote this caption 9 months ago. He's behind the U.S. Capitol. Quote, 9 months ago today, on January 6th, 2021, an angry mob attacked the U.S. Capitol. I walked around the complex today, and it was very calm. As you know, the perimeter security fence is gone. At least for now.
You know what they were calling it?
Ratios.
Yeah. Straight from Thomas Massie's office, they were calling it Fort Pelosi up there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Good for them.
It's ridiculous. But you're absolutely right, James. You've got to be able to stand on your own 2 feet and say, I don't care what they say about me. If you're going to be effective in changing the culture, which is the most important thing that we're up against right now, you've got to be able to sit there and say, listen, they're going to tell lies, they're going to besmirch me, they're going to blackball me, whatever it is. You got to be okay with
it. Most people, when that happens, they stop. They start reacting. They start playing on the turf of the opposition. And to do this, you effectively do have to suffer. You have to struggle and suffer and go through pain. And that's what – it's going to take pain. I think people are going to have to go through a lot of pain in order to get to the destination. But the problem I find, I've seen people do this, and then they get lawyered up, and then they start to, you know, you just have to keep going. You just have to keep – I mean, we're banned on Twitter. I wanted to tell you, we are banned on Twitter, but we're trending on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually renders people get pretty confused by that. They don't understand it. Well, it's because you got to get the story has to be so strong that nobody can ignore it. And we distribute by proxy. So we send the stories to other people, and they embed the videos. And that's what you have to do. And also, I think people have to see. I think images are transformative. And you say, Luke, the power of words. You know, Orwell writes in 1984, the party, communist, tell you to reject the evidence of your own eyes and ears. It's their final, most essential commandment. That's their number one rule. Yep. Do not believe what you see and hear. So I think words are not 1,000th the power of images.
Exactly.
If we're gonna win this battle, it has to be through images. That's why we call it veritas, cinema verite. Images anesthetize. They transfix in a way that words do not. And oftentimes you're putting that person in this dichotomy. In Brooklyn, we had left-wing people in Brooklyn sharing our Pfizer videos. I got messages from people, like hipsters were sharing our videos. They didn't even know like what Project Veritas was. They're just like, wow, this big bad pharmaceutical company is lying to people. That's what I'm talking about, you know? Yeah.
You guys also just had a big expose on like a nursing home scandal.
That's right, in Washington State. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I saw a lot of sentiment. People were saying it's a bummer this story doesn't get as much play because it's not culture war, but it's one of the most serious issues.
Happens all the time in nursing homes. People forge, you know, checkmark documents, a lot of paperwork in the bureaucracy. So people were just forging checkmarks to take care of these elderly people they were not providing care for.
This is what I love. They say far right. And it's like you've got stories targeting mainstream media and big tech companies as well as nursing homes. And I'm like, what does that mean? Are nursing homes secretly communist organizations?
Yeah. Right. And you mentioned fear. I thought that was such an important point. We should do a whole hour on fear because the guy at CNN, Charlie Chester, said fear sells.
Well,
they put the ticker on the screen with all the people dying. He goes, we want it to be higher. I'm quoting him. Why isn't it higher? Why can't we have the death toll higher from COVID? Because it'll sell more ads. This is what this man is saying.
I hate to be the history buff in the room with the anti-federalists. They call them the bugbears and the hobgoblins. And the MO has been the same ever since. Like the anti-federalists sit there and they're prophets talking about the United States Constitution, right? Like this is a centralization of power. And what it's going to lead to is the enslavement of every man, woman, and child in the United States, right? Like what we should be doing is keeping the states as free as possible. And, you know, hey, in peace, we'll be friendly. And in war, hey, we're enemies, but this is what it is. This is what goes into everything that we do overseas. Former Marine, served in the special operations and saw this stuff up close and personal. And what goes into warfare before you actually go kinetic is a mountain of fear and division. Hmm. And if you can fear and you make people fearful and divide them, you can conquer them. And that it's just the absolute truth. But to see, you know, what we're seeing now with these people pushing fear 24/7, ramping it up. I mean, do you guys understand that like when we talk about the 99.5% that they're talking about in terms of being like hospitalized in terms of COVID or dying of COVID right now? What they're talking about is the CDC number that you're not actually a fully vaxxed person until 15 days after your second vaccination. Mm-hmm. So anybody in that time that has any type of ailment that goes to the hospital or dies during that time that's had a shot or two shots is considered unvaccinated, and that's a number that they're reporting to you to scare the hell out of you.
Let's talk about what fear leads to. So we have this story from the Atlantic. America is running out of everything. Mm. The global supply chain is slowing down at the very moment when Americans are demanding that it go into overdrive. For the longest time, they said the economy is actually recovering. There's just too much demand. Now they're back to actually, yeah, it's collapsing. Now what happens is in the early days, they said 15 days to slow the spread. And people said, okay, 15 days. I'm fine with that. Then they started saying, look at the numbers, look at the numbers. CNN, I don't think it's a grand conspiracy. I think what happens is CNN knows it's gangbusters in the ratings when they get that ticker on the screen showing dead people. Regular people then panic, put on 80 masks, and are sitting in the streets shaking and convulsing in fear. They then demand their politicians. The Democrats then say, this is an excellent opportunity to ram through our agenda. Yep. So it becomes this endless spiral that results in now nearly 2 years of economic collapse. And there's no food to eat. I mean, there's food to eat, but it's expensive. I went to the store today. We got our I've been talking about this for a while because we go grocery shopping periodically. Our shopping cart was about 3/4 full, $700.
Wow.
I looked at the final bill. It was like 680 something. And I was just like, what the? And we have meat, cheese, you know, we got strawberries. And I'm like, we didn't like fill this cart. I asked the woman, our food price is going up, and she just looks at me and she goes, they are way up. And this is because people are trapped in a spiral of fear. They're so terrified. There was this poll that went around asking Democrats and Republicans what percent of people with COVID are hospitalized. Republicans correctly answered, it's between like 1 and 5%. The Democrats thought it was like 40 or some ridiculously high number. Why? They watch CNN. So I'll tell you, when you say like what happens before a total breakdown or revolution, people don't eat. The system is failing them. They don't feel secure in their health. You've got a pandemic. They don't feel secure in their homes. The eviction moratorium's canceled. They can't work and they don't have food to eat. Mm-hmm. The economy is shut down. This, I believe, is first and foremost a fault of the media who was willing to lie, cheat, and steal to drum up their ratings because they've been dying. For the past several years, we heard it from Shane Smith, the CEO of Vice, back in 2014. He said there will be a bloodbath in digital. He was talking about how media was going to be on fire, and it was coming soon. We then started seeing the ratings collapse, and we still do, of all of these big networks. But then Trump came along, pumped some lifeblood in the system for a little bit. Now that he's out and the ratings are collapsing once again, they are desperate. What do they got? Put that big old death number on the screen because it'll shock people and get us ratings. But those scared people vote for authoritarians and despots who then choke out the system, causing a further collapse. It is a downward death spiral, and we're trapped in it.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about this earlier today. I mean, I think we're at war. And this is, you know, I don't say that lightly, and I've always been this person that's super optimistic. But when I look at what the landscape is and the tactics and procedures that I've seen in other countries, you've got mass confusion through propaganda, misinformation, disinformation. You've got the economy and the supply chain being destroyed on purpose by these people. I mean, they went after all the small businesses this last year, where you see banks, you see corporations, and you see politicians making out like bandits. But anybody who's not in that upper echelon, they're getting screwed. You've got the ramp up of government assistance because things are failing and people need to eat. They need to clothe themselves. You see the mandates for medical tyranny happened in Germany. You've got the creation of food shortages in a place where food is abundant. I mean, everybody's seen the damn Dunkin' Donuts video, right? Where we're just throwing out trays and trays of donuts, man. Right? Like, not that donuts are going to be, you know, your staple, but we throw out food, and that's a great problem to have in a country. You also have the instigation of riots. You have the sowing of hate and discontent. You have the silencing of dissent. These have already happened in America. What you're missing is the removal of assistance, or the centralization of assistance, where you say, hey, listen, we can't take care of you out there anymore. You're going to have to come here into this camp. You know, it's far-fetched idea.
And yeah, but look at you see what's happening in Australia, right?
Yeah. They're
building camps. Well, now we have a story from the Daily Beast that said fascist anti-vaccine mandate rioters caused, you know, outbreak of COVID. Yeah. And I said that's what they were going to do next. I said they built the camps and they say it's just for the people who are traveling.
Yeah.
Then you're going to see protests over their draconian mandate. And then they're going to say, oh, no, they caused a super spreader event. For their own good, they'll need to be quarantined.
I have the article here actually lined up as you were talking about it. And the article is titled, quote, fascist anti-vax riot sparks COVID outbreak in Australia with Rupert Murdoch's help.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about just living in another plane of reality. I mean, holy freaking cow. This is the same magazine that was the same alleged news organization that was cheering on the BLM protesters that were making arguments that scientists say BLM protests help people with COVID and help prevent the spread. But anti-vax protests and somehow also spread the spread. How does that make sense? There's no logic here. There's no understanding. There's a completely different world that people are living in. And
it's
that's
not,
why.
No.
Stop watching
lying.
The news.
Well, no. I do think a lot of them have to lie to themselves, have to convince themselves. I do believe there's psychological warfare out there. I do believe there's a lot of people under trauma-based mind control, because nonstop what was just issued into their head is everyone's dying. Your grandma's going to die. Your mother's going to die. Your loved one's going to die. That has such an impact on you. And they were locked down inside of their homes and told to watch the boob tube. And what happens? You're literally linked into the programming of the multinational corporate elites that are run by big pharma agencies that are invested heavily in it, that are regurgitating everything to the point where people are just blindly repeating it, and in such a trauma state they're shaking in their boots at people walking near them. That's the point that we're at right now, and it's delusion.
Pfizer Incorporated on Twitter. This is today. We're in a race to save the world. We've teamed up with the Daily Beast. They are teaming up.
Sweet, and we're going
to teaming. Wow. So what? Pfizer right here says Pfizer Incorporated. This is a blue check mark. Pfizer on Twitter. We're teaming up with the journalism organization. What do you mean teaming up? Like, with investigators?
Are they just supposed to report?
But there's this symbiotic.
Like a massive multinational pharmaceutical joins forces with
me, journalists.
Yeah. I mean, in quotation marks.
But like, it's all about the fear.
Yeah,
it's all about the fear. And like, I in some small way, like when we got the Pfizer scientist on Monday saying, "Oh, you don't need our vaccine if you've had COVID. Your antibodies are stronger if you've had COVID. You don't take our vaccine." This is a scientist. a master's degree in neurobiology.
I was shocked to find how wrong the Pfizer scientist was, as we all know, right? That Pfizer scientist certainly was giving the incorrect stated opinions.
Yeah.
Well, there were three of them saying the same thing.
It's weird.
Now, that means those three scientists who are clearly wrong should not be working for Pfizer. I mean, the editorial guidelines of YouTube are clear.
And this is how you keep your stuff up on YouTube.
Well, look. If the scientists said them, we're not saying it. They can say whatever they want, but that's the joke.
I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
The joke is if YouTube is saying, you know, you can't say certain things about the vaccine that literally the scientists believe.
Yeah.
Then how can you have a mainstream narrative, like asserted by YouTube, that the scientists at Pfizer, at least three of them, don't even agree with? Clearly, then. They must be wrong, I guess, right?
You know, I've said this repeatedly. My colleagues were in the room with me. I was with Laura Logan in Texas. She said something that really struck me. She said that we are at the gates of Auschwitz right now. The gates of Auschwitz. And she said the coup has already occurred.
Yep.
You said it eloquently. Luke did. You did. Tim. I mean, everyone did it. And the only thing that's preventing the gates from opening, the proverbial Auschwitz, the modern day version of that, whatever that looks like, you know, like the Tom Cruise movie Oblivion, where he goes up in the spaceship and the world is controlled by this monolithic AI. Who knows what that looks like? But she said the only thing that's stopping us from entering the gates is we the people. Because there are so many good people out there. I guess I see it so much because I get so many DMs and emails, like thousands and thousands and thousands of people are so pissed off. And this is America. I mean, this is not these other places in the past.
Right.
This is America, and I think when people are pressed against the wall, I just feel like they're just not going to take it. They're not going to take it. Well, what do your fellow Marines think about this whole situation?
I mean, it's a great place to bring this in because we had, you know, obviously the collapse of the Afghanistan withdrawal, right? All completely planned, by the way. I mean, when we talk about, like, what's going on with these people who are standing in patience right now, and I really, like, for your audience, maybe they haven't heard this, but I think America has been extremely patient because they are powerful. And you can be quiet and powerful, and you can stand in power and not sit there and say, hey, listen, we have to do something violent. We have to be, you know, we don't have to be, you know, peaceful. Like, we are a peaceful people. 99.9% of people go about their everyday life without hurting people, without robbing them, raping them, murdering, kidnapping, whatever. America and most people are extremely good, patient people. If they wanted to do something about this, it would be over in a blink of an eye, especially given the amount of combat-hardened veterans that we have in this country.
I don't think we're headed towards a place of, like, mass civil war type violence.
I don't either.
If people didn't want to do something, they need only just carry on with their lives.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right? If Texas is upset with New York, they don't agree with each other, and then Texas just says, we're going to do our thing, you do yours, what's the issue? Why would anyone complain? So right now, I think the big issue is so there was a story I keep harping on about 10 violations issued in New York City over the business vaccine mandates. 10. 10 out of how many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of businesses?
Yeah.
They have no real ability to enforce this. They issued warnings, several thousand warnings over not having signs in their stores. But the reality is if people in New York just said, I don't care, there would be no vaccine mandate.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, I've started this thing called the Helios Initiative. And at first it was, I'm going to talk to anybody and everybody in the liberty space that's running for governor. And then it translated into, well, hey, listen, we're a post-constitutional republic now. We're acting through executive fiat and orders and everything else. We have the judicial that's backing them up, and we have a spineless, relegated Congress and legislative branch. How do we sit here and say, hey, listen, at the local level, how do we change this? Reach out and touch your elected sheriff, and reach out and touch your elected mayors who control the local police force. If you can do those two things, and I'm doing it locally in my county now, because one of my very good friends and my jiu-jitsu instructor was pulled over driving while black in a 2021 Lincoln Navigator, and there was nothing wrong with the car. It was a dealership hand-me-over so that they could work on his. And when this happened, I said, hey, man, you know, to the mayor and the chief of police, the chief of police ended up hanging up on me, and so I took it to the mayor. He's a Marine, and I said, hey, This civil asset forfeiture deal that you guys are doing around here is absolute nonsense. And I laid it out for him, you know, per the Constitution, the mechanics and how it works. You can't change the Constitution without an Article 5. And all of anybody who's ever in a office for government swears an oath per Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution. And anything that's not pursuant to the Constitution per Article 6, Section 2 of the Constitution is of no pursuance of the Constitution and is void. So if you can sit there and say, hey, listen, locally, we can touch our mayors, we can touch the sheriffs, and we can say this is not going to happen in our counties or in our cities. You can start to affect real change.
But if the state can't steal, where will it get its money?
Perfect.
But I also wanted to kind of highlight the lockdowns, because I think they're far more significant than we even led on to, because after 9/11, you couldn't avoid just non-stop establishment mainstream media news reporting about what happened, the trauma of it, and there was a lot of psychological warfare there. Something very similar happened where you couldn't avoid anything surrounding the sickness, COVID, that was going around during these 2 weeks of lockdowns. It's just 2 weeks to stop the spread. People were told to stop working. They were told to shut down their businesses. They went home. They went online. They turned on the television, and everywhere they went, you couldn't avoid this thing. And the mainstream media, the elites, the bureaucrats, the government officials, the multinational corporations were able to talk to them directly. And I think they did cause not just economic destruction, and a lot of mainstream media talks about it's COVID that's creating this economic havoc. No. It's the government that is creating this economic havoc, and it's not just supply shortages. It's rail car shortages. It's container ship shortages. It's truck driver shortages. It's natural raw supply shortages. I mean, these shortages are a lot more significant. I do think they're deliberate. I do think they're going to try to launch another economic war on people. The lockdowns were economic war. Yep. They destroyed small businesses. They helped the billionaire class. But by and large, the psychological warfare aspect, the trauma put on people, was far higher, far more significant. And I think we have to kind of reevaluate where we are as a people, because we can make fun of people who wear masks. We could, you know, some people call them mask tards, whatever. But these are people who are hurt. These are people who are traumatized. And I think trying to reach out to them in an empathetic way, trying to reach out to them and make them understand, like, hey, it's okay. Let's actually have a rational, real conversation that's not based on emotion, but it's based on facts. Let's actually show the data. Let's actually have this conversation. And we can't even do that on big tech social media because they're blocking a lot of the conversations. And that's why, you know, alternatives are so important. You have your own platform, Tim, that's growing. I have mine. I know you're working on yours. You probably have your own website. Yep. As well. I definitely recommend building that up, focusing on your email list, not on social media. But James, I kind of wanted to bring it back because you talked about Telegram a little bit. You're banned from Twitter. What alternatives are you seeing as the most ones that have email, the most amount of people, yeah, that you reach?
Well, we were at half a million email subs, and now we're like at a million.
Wow.
So that's like outrageous. It's like not even exponential is an understatement. Yeah. So people, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. Can I ask you what service you use or what service you recommend? I don't know if you guys are privy to that. I don't know if you guys can.
Campaign monitor.
Okay.
If you build it, they will come. When you started in your career, I admired your moxie. You just went out there and did it. You went there, to borrow Shane Smith's "We Go There" advice. Yeah. Imagine how ridiculous it is when your unique value proposition is actually going to the destination you're reporting on. But that's what you did. And to borrow your metaphor about war. The war is here. There's a great movie called The Insider, which, if you haven't seen it, you should watch it, with Al Pacino. And it was about the whistleblower in 1996 on 60 Minutes who blew the whistle on Big Tobacco. And the attorney hired by the state of Mississippi to assist in suing Big Tobacco explained so eloquently that in combat, events have a duration of seconds, sometimes minutes. But what you go through in this country if you're a whistleblower goes in, day out, week in, week out, month after month. You're assaulted psychologically.
Yeah.
You're assaulted financially, which is its own special kind of violence because it's directed at your children. You feel your whole family's future compromised, held hostage. This is war.
Yes, it is.
And in this country, traditionally, you hardly ever see these things happen. I mean, Jeffrey Wigand was a hero. He blew the whistle on Big Tobacco. The nicotine was addictive. But what I'm seeing, from my perspective, in terms of whether it's whatever platform you're on, I'm seeing people willing to go to war. This woman inside Pfizer,
she went to war.
Into her eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. I sat across from her. And she said, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to expose these people. Well, aren't you afraid? No, I'm taking a leap of faith. And she told me there's so many other people that are willing to be assaulted psychologically, financially. That's a pretty significant thing. And I would submit to you that there's two types of courage to fight a war. I've never done what you've done, and I admire your courage because I don't have your courage.
It basically comes down to eating crayons and things like that. So.
But there's different types of courage. There's moral courage, which means you're going up and you don't know what's going to happen to you.
Yes.
And I think that I'm seeing the landscape, and I'm seeing a lot of people willing to say, I value the public's right to know above my own welfare and my own career and my own livelihood.
Yeah.
And I also have children. And I don't know how I'm going to feed them, but the public's right to know is so paramount. And I just think that that is a very beautiful phenomenon. And I think you're going to see a lot of people come in from the federal government on the record, sitting down, talking, violating their own non-disclosure agreements. That's a significant thing. And one could argue perhaps that's war.
You brought up they have children, don't know how they're going to feed them. And that's one big debate we had on this show, that people are saying, I can't just put my politics before my children because I need to make sure they're well fed. But I would assert the only reason your kids are struggling to get food now or there's a risk is because of compliance. When they started the first part of the lockdowns, we all complied. And that was reasonable for a regular person. Then they've exacerbated those lockdowns. They've gotten worse. It's been nearly 2 years and they're still here. They're still locking everything down and people still comply. The shortages are due to the economic shutdown. Your children are at risk of not having food because you complied with the edicts that are not constitutional, that are not legal. And so now to hear people are saying, I'm willing to go to war, I'll put it this way. I just mentioned that when people have no risk, they're at risk of losing their shelter, they have no bodily security, and they have no food, they have nothing left to lose. Now you're seeing all of these people. Maybe one of the reasons you're seeing so many people is because they've been beaten down so much.
That's
they're
right.
Like, it's the line for me.
Yep. Yeah.
I cannot go any further. James, here's the documents.
There's going to be despair before there is hope. You're going to be pushed to the precipice. I feel like this is a very American thing that occurs. You're pushed to the line, and then everyone's, okay, I'm not to hell with this.
It's uncomfortableness.
I'm pushing back.
Yeah.
And I've been doing, you know, like I said, for a decade, maybe you get one or two sources a year, not 10,000 in 2 weeks.
Can people email you if they've got
VeritasTips@ProtonMail.com. That's V-E-R-I-T-A-S tips at ProtonMail.com. In fact, David Johnson, who messaged me here a moment ago, David Johnson was the guy, the critical race theory inside Hasbro Toys was inspired by you, Tim.
Oh, wow.
He loves you and your show.
Cool.
And he,
glad to hear it.
He came to us via me being here. So I would encourage you to message me. And we have a lot of people inside, multiple people inside Pfizer, a lot of people on the Border Patrol. A lot of people in Customs and Border Patrol, and of course the FBI is listening, so good for you, but we have the FBI. I'm just going to say it on the record. You've become a weaponized intelligence operation. Used to be a law enforcement operation, but you've become a weaponized domestic intelligence operation. If you come after me, I don't break the law, so if you come after me the rank and file inside your organization will hopefully revolt because it's horrible. But a lot of people in Customs and Border Patrol, a lot of people on the border reaching out to us. Many of those people will go public.
Remember how fun X-Files was? The FBI looked so cool. You know, Mulder was kind of crazy, but it was still cool. Now I'm just like, what are they going after? Like pole ropes and garages?
And where are the agents with the stones?
Because
God bless your brothers and sisters in battle overseas, but where are the people with the stones inside the bureau?
Well, and the thing is a lot of those guys were the same guys that were overseas. A lot of those guys, and I being one of them, thank God I didn't get into the FBI when I applied because I failed a polygraph test because of my former use of cannabis. But I'm telling you right now, like to think that the FBI can't just roll up a lot of these politicians and asshats who are running around in corporate America or the banksters. Like, this is a slam dunk. And we don't have anybody from the upper echelons ever seeing justice. I think people are sick of that.
They enter Congress at $174,000 a year salary, and then after, you know, a couple decades, they're worth hundreds of millions or whatever.
And they wear lizard suits.
But you'd think the rank and file, the rank and file of these organizations are probably decent, good people, I would think.
Well, and the thing is I know these guys. I mean, I can go to their house here. And that's the thing is you, like, hey, what the hell is going on? And I've heard some chatter, you know, behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, at the end of the day, I don't see anything. I don't see anything rolled up before a judge. I definitely don't see anything before cameras. And I don't see anything for people who are waiting, like normal, regular, everyday people who are sitting there going like, listen, we know Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. Have we done any investigation into this kind of stuff? Where is Ghislaine Maxwell? Where is she? You know, why are we not talking about this kind of stuff? Can people
the challenge is we don't know. However, my favorite quote is when I think it was Chris Reagan got into an Uber. The Uber driver immediately goes, yo, that guy didn't kill himself. Like, nobody believes the official narrative on that.
Well, I will tell you one quick story about the FBI. Happened in April of this year. The New York Times did a front page hit piece on me. Said I was trying to subvert the FBI. Subvert the FBI.
Because.
Project Veritas. Because we did some investigative reporting on people in D.C. at bars making comments about how they weren't working. The people worked for the State Department. They worked for the DOJ. One of them was an assistant. They were all fired from their jobs. They didn't report that part, that they were fired from their jobs for doing bad things. No, they said I was trying to subvert the FBI. And right when that New York Times story broke, the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, called my cell phone. At first, I thought it was a prank call. I thought this was a bad Lauren Windsor, Ryan Clayton operation.
We'd like to tell you about your vehicles.
I thought, this can't possibly be an ATF agent from Albany, New York. It's lampooning an SNL skit of what an ATF. No, no, they were calling me saying, did you buy a shotgun last year? Mm. And I did. And it's legal for me to do so. And as a New York State resident, buy a shotgun. And I said, what are you talking about? Are you kidding me? I said, I'm going to put you in touch with my lawyer because I don't know why you're calling me. And they said, well, do you have something to be ashamed of? And I'm like, what? I literally was shocked. And this happened right when the New York Times published their article. So the New York Times and the FBI and the ATF are all just working together.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a comedy of errors. It's dystopian. It's anathema to everything that journalism is supposed to be. But I have to believe the rank and file that the so-called middle class of these organizations are good people. And there's going to be a point of no return, a event horizon, where those people say, to hell with this. You can put me in jail. I'm ready to go to jail because I want to stand in principle or something's more important than being part of this institution.
Yeah. I mean, that's very optimistic. I would definitely disagree, especially from a historical context.
Which part?
With believing that the agency is going to turn for the greater good. I hope so. I wish we should always try. We should always put everything in our ability to make sure that this happens. But this is also the same agency that literally sat on their hands for over 30 years as Epstein was able to run an international trafficking
operation. Oh, I don't think they're going to turn. Yeah. I think that people are probably going to go public with revelations.
I hope so. Some of them are. Some of them are just being fired. Some of them are quitting as well. So it's a very, very difficult dichotomy to be in. But even from the history of the FBI, I mean, there's so many instances now.
MLK right from the beginning, right?
Yeah, MLK from the very beginning, JFK too. But as they're hassling you, there's literal people who hurt children in unspeakable ways that the FBI just decides to look the other way. Nassar, Epstein, we could keep going. Andrew.
Now they're talking about they might not even charge the guy. Is that what this report is?
Yeah. And the victims are like, they are deliberately making sure that we get no justice here at all. So there's something sinister to the core of these agencies that really deserves to be called out because, again, they're unaccountable. And they're essentially, they had victims coming from Jeffrey Epstein in the 90s to the FBI. The FBI recorded witness testimony about Epstein from the 90s, and they still didn't do anything about it.
I wanted to ask you James, how long have you been doing this work?
Since I was 19 when I started my college newspaper and pretty much have been doing it ever since then. It broke through in a major way when I was 24 years old. So since about 2004.
You've been putting yourself out there. You know, you yourself are exposed. You've had like the government come after you on more than one occasion.
Oh yeah. I was arrested by the FBI in 2010. I was falsely accused of a felony, which I was eventually exonerated from, but I wrote a whole book about it. It was a long story.
You've been very brave. And with that courage, you've inspired many others to be brave, to come forward, to stand up, reject the authoritarianism, the lies, the manipulation. And so when I hear from a lot of people saying, they say, oh, it's easy for you to say, Tim, look how well off you are. My point is, I have lived a life of willing to stand up and say no when I am faced with something I view as wrong. And that has not led me astray. And I feel the same for you. You have repeatedly stood up defended what's right, even with the federal government coming after you and getting arrested by the FBI. You refused to back down, and it's worked out pretty well for you and even helped you lead many others. From that, I would just say to many other people, don't look at any of us and think that we have any excuse or that it's easier for us. It was years of risk and sacrifice. And I think that's why it's so incredible when you do these fundraisers for the whistleblowers that you're basically letting them know there's a safety net there.
Yes.
You can be brave. We're not going to let you down. It is not that you are going to come out, stand up for what you believe in, and you'll be thrown to the wind.
Well, I think this is a very important thing to say, is that the things I've been through, when I was incarcerated and then placed on federal probation, supervised probation, it was this very bizarre thing I went through, and it was so bizarre that my lawyers and I've never seen anything like this before. So it was a bit of a political prisoner, and I had this sort of "why have you forsaken me" thing for 2 or 3 years in New Jersey. I was stuck in a halfway house situation. I was like, "What is this? Is to be falsely accused of something and to be jailed for it is a really terrifying experience when you grow up to pledge allegiance to your flag." And I said, why am I going through this? And I did not know why until recently. A lot of the people trust Project Veritas because of the things that I have been through, because I guess it shows them that, you know, I believe in what I'm doing. But I also think that the facts disclosed in these reports brought into the consciousness of ordinary people tend to expand the audience, and you create this effect where the balance of political forces starts to change and the role of the oppressor becomes reversed. And as David assumes new strength, Goliath starts to be attacked from all sides. The hunter becomes the hunted. The organizations in question probably fear. I think this is a safe, my team is over there. I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. I think it's safe to assume they fear us more than we fear them at this point in time. And the one thing I've learned about communism, because I've been fascinated by communism, I'm reading a lot about communism. It strikes me that the only thing, and I think this is a great issue to ask you, the only thing they fear at this point in time is being exposed. I'm not sure they fear anything else, do they? They fear anything else?
If the I would say mostly I agree with you. Like, maybe we'd have to research a little bit more to think about it, or think about it a little bit more, but I think so long as people are kept in the dark, they can do whatever they want.
Their whole agenda hangs in the balance of lies that could be exposed at any moment. So that's a very delicate, vulnerable situation to be in, and I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
I feel like shows like this, and the work you do, they certainly have done, they've done a lot to try and silence you, and it's not working. And I think that's exactly why a lot of people might say, okay, well, if they're really all powerful, or if they're really this big coordinated group, or there's powerful elites, like, why aren't they just banning all these channels? They're not that powerful. There's powerful right. interests and powerful elites, and they are fighting a war, and they need you convinced that they own you, they control you, and you can't do anything. No, but the people actually have the ability. I think you're proof. I think this show right now is proof. I'm sure there's a lot of people over at YouTube who are watching this going like, oh, geez.
Hey, Tim, I'm sure there's a lot of people at YouTube who like you.
I know that's true.
I don't know what percentage, 15, 20%.
Well, I'll tell you guys. I know I've known for a long time some people at Google. I've actually consulted some of the development of, you know, various apps they've been trying to do, particularly on live streaming and mobile stuff. And I've hung out at the Google HQ several times. I've invited all these YouTube parties. And now it's not the same in the past few years. Things have definitely been different. But I talked to some of my friends who have since left YouTube, and they'll say things to me like, oh, dude, there's a ton of people at YouTube who are like watching your show all the time. They're huge fans. I hear from current workers. They're like, yeah, we actually really enjoy your content. We don't, you know, it's, you know, the interesting thing is they all feel like they can't say anything and it has to be a secret. They're like, oh, but no one can know we watch your show. That's the scary thing.
Yep.
They need you convinced that you can't express yourself. And you can. Look what you were saying about when you just finally stop caring what people think about you is when you'll be free. There was this thing I was reading today about a paradox where people go along with something they hate because they think everyone else likes it, but everyone else hates it too. So it enforces this social, you know, order over suffering. There are a lot of people probably at a lot of companies you wouldn't expect. They're probably big fans of you, James. They're big fans of Luke, big fans of you, Shane. They won't say it though out of fear. And that's why I always say you've got to stand up for yourself. You've got to speak up for these things. because it lets other people know. You're lighting that torch in the cave, then everyone can finally see.
Andrew Breitbart used to say something to the effect of, if you keep going, you're sending a message to others that they can, you know, keep going, keep running towards the fire. But just imagine if all the people just stood up with cameras and exposed all the deceivers in their midst. And yeah. I think
you'd be out of a job.
No, I mean, that is the mission of what we're trying to accomplish.
A good nonprofit should shut itself down.
That is absolutely true. I don't think I'll ever be out of a job, but yes.
There's too much evil.
There's too much corruption. I think people are going to be afraid, though, of the person sitting next to them wearing a camera, and that'll create a more virtuous society.
Yeah. Bro, I got to tell you, you know, I watch the work you do, and sometimes it feels like you are sitting at the base of the Burj Dubai with a ball peen hammer trying to knock it down. Like, there is just so much corruption. But maybe that's unfair, because I think you've had such a tremendous impact with many of these stories. That's why it's so viral. That's why it's been expanding.
But no one's done me any favors. Like, I have no real allies in a sense. I mean, even the story done, Ivory Hecker, who is a Fox news organization, local affiliate, but I noticed that Fox was wary to have me on after that story. So I don't really have any allies. No one's done me any favors. Every story has to be so strong and so bulletproof and so incontrovertible that it forces people to share it, even though we're banned on Twitter. Yeah. You know, and you're right. Nonprofits most start, you know, Eric Hoffer's dictate. What started out as a mass movement usually ends up as a racket, a cult, or a corporation. So most nonprofit organizations in D.C. have a stated mission, and if you solve the problem, they can no longer fundraise.
I think the larger point that I think we're trying to get at here and trying to tell the audience is that living a life with fear is a life not worth living. What's the point if you're going to be scared and not be able to live your truest, freest version? And once you let go of those shackles, that kind of mind control that controls every aspect of your existence, your life becomes amazing, it becomes beautiful, and it becomes so much more fun and so much more worthwhile than being a wagee, than being someone that is licking someone's jackboots, complying, and afraid that someone might actually get them sick or might take away their money. Once you get rid of all that fear, everything, I believe in some, you know, synchronicity as well. Everything kind of lines up through the trajectory of your existence, and it lines up perfectly once you let go of that fear and you start going towards, you know, I don't want to sound like a damn hippie, love. But it's true. but it's true. It's true. There's these two major frequencies. You choose which ones you resonate with. And once you let go of that negative one, once you're in that positive pathway, everything just starts opening up for you.
Look at him wearing that crystal.
And the other, you know, it is a nice positive crystal. But the other, like, to your point, it's not even just not living in fear. It's seeing the fear and realizing the fear and taking action in face of that fear. And that's courage. I mean, we need a lot more people that will sit there and say, listen, I understand the risk. These are great risks to me, my family, my health, you know, maybe even just being on this earth anymore, and saying, you know what? I got to do the right thing here.
Some things are more important.
Yeah, that what you said there was so eloquent. I almost feel like my team should cut that as an ad for being a Project Veritas whistleblower. You're right. The need to not live in fear is liberating, even if you lose everything. And I've come to peace with the fact that I may go back to jail. Not because I've done anything illegal, but because I haven't done anything illegal. I've just come to peace with that, because I'd rather do the right thing, and I can live with myself and my conscience can be clean. And there's, maybe, you know, if you're an odds maker, you might even say it's probable.
maybe political prison.
Political prison, jail, yeah.
Gulags. Potato, potato.
Whatever.
Quarantine center.
Let's jump over to Super Chats. We got a ton of Super Chats. I don't think we'll be able to get to we're not going to be able to get to everybody, but we'll read as much as we can. Smash that like button. Many of you already have. And go to TimCast.com, because we'll have that member segment coming up around 11 or so p.m. Let's read. This one is important. Waffle Sensei says, my Facebook was suspended today for sharing the Project Veritas story on Pfizer. Mm. It was memory hold, and I was threatened by Facebook that if I repost it, they would take further punitive action against my account.
That is happening everywhere. What do we think about that, Eric?
I mean, I think it's just getting worse. I mean, we've probably seen tens of thousands of those.
Tens of thousands of messages. Facebook's really coming at us. Instagram hasn't taken down the recent videos. YouTube still has it up. Facebook's really, really butthurt.
And
over
they're going
to
die because of it, though.
Yeah, they're going to lose people.
People are leaving.
They're going to
lose.
That's the thing. We've gained 500,000 email addresses. Right. So let them eat cake, to quote Marie Antoinette. Let them do their thing. and Veritas will just become a mass movement.
You can all revel in the idea that I think what Zuckerberg lost a couple billion at least the other day, right? And he's not gonna, it's not going to get any better.
Nope. Yes, yes, and yes, it, that's right.
Dylan Tooley says, I live in L.A. I feel lost and don't know what to do after these vax requirements. I'm another problem vax anti-mandator. Now, what would you guys say to somebody living in Los Angeles right now? They just enacted the strictest vaccine mandates. My personal thing is move. It may not be easy. It may be the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. You got to get out.
Either way, I mean, either stand your ground and don't comply. I mean, mass disobedience is what America needs more than ever right now. And peaceful, right? Like, I mean, it's one of the core principles that I talk about is just peace.
Speaking of mass civil disobedience, Tim, this just happened. Twitter is labeling the Give, Send, Go. That's the Christian website to fundraise for the whistleblowers. GiveSendGo.com/Pfizer whistleblower. Twitter has sent out a message to anyone who shared this link saying, quote, warning, this link may be unsafe.
Wow.
The link is unsafe. They're coming up with new, there's like graphic designers at Twitter designing new, you know, things to post.
I got one today that said this conversation might be intense. Somebody photoshopped it and set it online.
Malicious links. Violent links. So the fundraising website for the Pfizer whistleblower for quoting the vice president of Pfizer is, quote, possibly violent. So here's what I want. I'm going to do a call to action here. We're going to show these people who's boss. There's a 250,000 people watching this live stream. If all of you donated $5 to Melissa at GiveSendGo/Pfizer whistleblower. That's P-F-I-Z-E-R whistleblower. That's GiveSendGo/Pfizer whistleblower. You tell Jack Dorsey who's boss. Because they just sent out a message saying that the fundraising website was unsafe. Unsafe.
Huh. That's how they do it. All right.
Incredible.
We got Jeremy Conrad who says, first super chat ever. Does James have any suggestions on how to be an investigative journalist? And what can I do as an individual to fight what's happening?
School of Hard Knocks. Hmm. I mean, people ask me, how did I learn to sail my sailboat? I said, School of Hard Knocks. Just go out there and fail. You got to go out there and stumble and fail. Couple rules about journalism. Publish something that the person doesn't want published. Everything else is public relations. So there's some element of secrecy. Either they're trying to keep secret hidden from the public. That's a good story. If I was in college, start when you're in college, especially at a state university, which is, you know, governed by FOIA requests. I went to Rutgers. It was a public school. And get your feet wet in college and go out there and just start doing it. Go out in the street. Hidden cameras in 38 states is legal. You got to just go out there and do it, Tim, and learn the hard way.
Right on. Here's one. Reith Nelson says, father of four and refused the jab, will not teach them submission. Sold off almost all of my World War I and World War II collection to start my own machine shop, but need help. Site Give Save Go under Stand Alone.
Okay.
Best of luck, and I mean that sincerely. And Reith says, Give Save Go, quote, Stand Alone. I genuinely
give send go.
It says quote give save go. Maybe he means give send go.
I think
maybe
he means give send go.
That's seems highly probable. Mm. But to everybody who's taken that risk, like I said, maybe the hardest thing you do in your life. I get it, but I just feel like compliance will make things worse. You will not. You cannot comply your way out of tyranny.
Mm-hmm. True statement.
And if you got enough, I mean, that's the thing is, if you just got enough people just sitting there saying no. What they're doing right now at these major companies where the mandates came out is they're taking polls. They're saying, hey, are you vaccinated or are you not vaccinated? If you say, listen, I'm not telling you, and I'm going to ask for my reasonable request here to say you don't have any grounds to ask me on this and then start citing law on top of it, man, enough of those people, and the company changes their mind right there.
There was actually a story we had that I think we're looking into. They said something like there were 6,000 employees of their company and 3,000 rejected the mandate, so the company just shut up.
Yeah, that's it.
Because they were like, well, we like existing, so we'll do what the people say.
That's how you do it.
Frosty Gunn says, Tim, your talk about vaccine mandates has spoken to me. My college is requiring them now, and so after this term, I'm quitting everything I know to go to Florida. Long live the Republic, Tim. Thank you. Well, I'll say this. I think college is a waste of time.
Yeah.
I don't think you said School of Hard Knocks.
I agree. It depends on what he wants to do.
Right. You want to be a lawyer or a doctor.
I would take the money from college and start a business. Mm. It's probably the best thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah. You can always take the money from college, use it to live off of where you do an internship to learn the ropes and watch something and then have a better chance doing your own thing.
Yeah, what are you passionate about? I mean, if you're going to college and you don't know what the hell you're going to do anyway, you're wasting your time, which is your most valuable
resource.
And
your money.
And then money on top of it when you're going to go into debt, which you could probably pay for a small house or business.
Business loans are a lot more forgiving than college loans.
Darn right they are.
All right, we got a bunch of recommendations for various people we'll definitely look into. Let's see. Macaroni says, thanks for the email from Project Veritas. Share by proxy. YouTube didn't notify me of the stream. Yeah, and I'm kind of feeling like we've had a few guests that YouTube clearly wasn't recommending, and like our viewership was way low. Mm. And I'm wondering if your guys' share by proxy is helping keep people notified that we're having the show, you know what I mean? You guys sent out an email, I suppose, so.
Yep.
And that's probably it. All right, let's see what we got here. Scott Spivey says, Tim, Facebook banned Pfizer Veritas video I posted today. So I posted your Timcast news video on the subject today, and they struck that down and gave me a warning.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Can't get it out, man. Can't let it out of the bag.
It was funny. Zuckerberg actually expressed a statement on an executive Zoom call about his opinion about the vaccine. He was concerned about its effects on DNA, RNA. And Mark Zuckerberg's own statement privately to his fellow executives on this private Zoom call, which was leaked to us, would be in violation of the Facebook policy. Me quoting Mark Zuckerberg would get me banned on Facebook. So it's a comedy of errors. It's a dystopian, you know, reality. It's great that we're laughing about
it. Weird that the Android has feelings kind of too, right?
We'll all be in jail soon, but it'll be fine. We'll have great jail.
No, I won't be.
Bokeh, Trent Sink says, Andrew Breitbart would be proud of you, James. Thank you for what you do for freedom of information and saving the world.
True that.
Yeah.
No, I miss the man. He was a force of nature. There's no one like him.
You know what's really crazy is I know this like ridiculously liberal woman who is just like she was Russiagate insane, and she knew Andrew back in the day. And I remember I was having lunch with her, and she was talking to me because she was lefty back then. She was like, I don't know what happened to him. He used to be such a good liberal, and then one day he started to change, and then he just became far right. And this was a long time ago. Long time ago, I was told this. This is probably like 2011. No, this is 2009, 2010 maybe. I was told this. Way back, late 2010, I think it was. I was told this. And I always thought it was really interesting.
Well, Breitbart was a very unique man. It was a different world back then. I mean, people would engage with each other like, you know, Dave Weigel, the Washington Post, you would engage with each other on Twitter. Now it's just this such dichotomous, polarized society where our story can get 5 million views on YouTube and not one single blue checkmark person will even utter a word about it. Well, 9 years ago when Andrew and I were working together, it was just different. And right before he died, like 3 days before Andrew died, March 1st, 2012, I remember the morning, he made this statement to me on the telephone. It was something like, James, they want us to dance. We're not going to dance with them. They want us on a leash. They want us to be leashed. We're not going to be leashed. You know, it was just, he had this very prophetic, powerful, cultural warrior spirit. And he knew, Andrew Breitbart knew how to work with the media, but also expose the media. It was this ballet he did where he sort of hacked the media. But those were the days a decade ago when there was conversation. 10 years ago, even though they hated me, they'd still talk to me.
Well, it found
me interesting. John Stewart praised you on multiple occasions.
He did. John Stewart was 75%, you know, he had this 25-75, whereas Trevor Noah is just 100-0. But it was a different world. It was just a different time. And it was much more interesting. It's sad that people won't know that part of the world, but that's what it was 10 years
ago. That's when they didn't think they could say the private things out loud, and now they don't care.
Right. Yeah.
Jason Kudu says, James is absolutely right. Journalists, headlines, reporting, and articles these days are wordsmith professionals, more than just spin. Unbelievable how disingenuous it is. It is. Sometimes I read these articles, and I'm just flabbergasted. You know, the fascist union workers helped by Rupert Murdoch has to be one of the most psychotic headlines I've ever seen. Are there people who still fall for this stuff?
Of course.
That's crazy.
Yeah, when you lock people down and you keep them isolated, which is an absolute torture tactic to make people mentally unstable, of course they believe this kind of stuff. Stop watching mainstream propaganda. Turn it off. If you haven't done it, turn it off now?
Well, they tend to, these reporters tend to extol the high and mighty rather than expose them. And in this, and in this symbiotic relationship between quote unquote journalist, I say that in quotes, and the pharmaceutical companies and the government, it's usually the one in the pharmaceutical company manipulating the journalist.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the one in the corporation or the government that's doing the manipulating. So like a two-star general anonymously talks to the New York Times. The New York Times reporter is the one being manipulated by their source. And what we do is unmask those sources. We don't care. So that's the problem. The problem, and they become slaves to access, Tim. Media has become slave to their dependency on their sources of information.
It's amazing how earning credibility in journalism is how you can climb the establishment social ladder. You know, you work for a news organization and you get access to, you know, Psaki or someone in the Biden administration.
Yeah.
And you get the story. Ah, Joe Biden told me this. And
that's right.
Then you can publish the story and they're like, oh, good job.
That's the John Taylor Gatto, the school teacher from New York that wrote a whole bunch of great books on the indoctrination of America and where it came from with Prussia, right? When you look at the regurgitation that's taught, just regurgitate what we're talking about and you'll be fine.
Yep. Yep.
Manufacturing Consent is also a great book I recommend people read.
Great book.
All right. Into the Fray podcast says, for James, thank you for what you do. Question. What are your thoughts on a movement to encourage states to take a stand and protect their citizens from these illegal and immoral exercises of federal power?
As such a movement exists, I think it's called, I forgot the name of the organization that does that very thing. I've just escaped my mind, but there is an organization that does that. If it comes to me, I'll bring it up again.
Right on. Phoenix On says, Tim is right. It makes no difference if your vax passport says vaccinated or natural immunity. It's the passport that's the problem. Because once they have that, they can add whatever they want to it. Yeah. They can be like, you got to be 6 feet tall. Sorry, bye-bye.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, I doubt they do something like that, but you get the point. They can put whatever. Nick McConchie says, thank you for your amazing work, Project Veritas. I think he meant Veritas, but worth reading on the list.
Veritas.
It's getting late on a Thursday.
Project Veritas. The IRS, the IRS stamped our approval in 2011, right, when Lois Lerner was, going after the Tea Party. And I got to think, because my name wasn't on the documents, I wasn't on the board then, I got to think that she thought she was stamping like a Latin book discussion club or something. She had no idea what she was approving.
Put it in front of her.
KCB says, I sold my beautiful house in the city and got a farmhouse on a bit of land. I deleted all social media and spend my time tending it. Never been happier.
Ooh. Nice.
Awesome.
True. Every day I wake up, I, do my morning, routine, hygiene, have some coffee, and then I get to work. I'm reading. As soon as I wake up, I'm like reading news stories. I've got messages from people, and I'm going through it. But as soon as I finish my first recording, I go tend to the chickens. We've got 15 now. And we've got the babies are separated from the adults, and you got to do all the work. And then after I do that, I get back to work. And so then there's meetings, and then there's plans, there's projects. It is endless work all day. And then I get maybe from like 3 p.m. to 4, I get to exercise. I'll be skating. Then I get to eat food. Today, we had to go to the store today because we ran out of food. And then it's back to work. Back to work because we have this show, and guests are coming, and we're doing a whole bunch of shows. It's just endless work. But I'll tell you this. Going outside, and one of the best days, best mornings I've ever had, was when I got my own eggs right from the chickens. I picked some peppers right from the little farm area, grabbed a handful of cherry tomatoes. I went inside, chopped it all up, made an omelet, all from my own food. It's a crazy feeling. Growing up in the city, a lot of people in the city, they've never experienced something like this. They don't understand. You just pick the egg up. You just eat it.
It's independence, too.
Yeah.
And it came from almost nothing. I wish America was there. I'm a homesteader in Georgia, and it's like to be able to do all of this with your own life and your own property. Yeah. If I didn't have to be in politics because I want my kids to be free someday, I would spend all my time and effort trying to make sure that people understand that, hey, your ability to grow food, provide for your own safety, get water and energy and all that kind of stuff on your own, man, that is one of those most self-fulfilling pieces of life you could possibly have.
This is interesting. IC Dean says, found out from a customer who works for a big Pennsylvania meatpacking plant that the FDA will shut down any facility that does not have 100% of the employees vaxxed. It is not up to management, but the government. I've not heard that. That definitely we should investigate and we'll look into. D's Nuts on Your Mom says,
whoa.
Thank you for having James on when no big media outlet will touch him right now because it will hurt their profits. Well, look, I'm a big fan of Project Veritas. I made, you guys reposted that joke I made where I was like, James has got a serious problem. He's going to require surgery because he has too many spines. But I'm just, you know what really frustrates me is if you watch the arguments I have, I'm constantly upset with people who are cowardly, people who won't be brave, who won't stand up for themselves. And then I can look over at the Project Veritas team and be like, they're putting everything on the line for this. Like we were talking before the show, we were like, is James scared? Like, do you think he's worried about, I mean, you mentioned political prison.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see the work you guys are doing, I'm like, bro, you can come on whenever you want. Well, that's I get a text message in the middle of the day and I'm like, James will come.
I think someone DM'd me yesterday from your staff and said, you want to come on tomorrow? And I got back 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'd say two things. I would say, the commercial, this is a guy at ABC News we secretly recorded. And he said in a bar, the commercial imperative is incompatible with the news. So it's very difficult to pursue profit and also do it, be an investigative reporter. So traditionally what would happen in like the 1970s or something is that a capitalist newsman would say, I'm just going to lose money on this investigation because I believe in the cause of doing good news journalism. That's gone. People don't do that. So the idea of spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on an investigation, which is what it cost us to do, but we're a foundation, we don't have advertising dollars, gives us independence. But the commercial imperative says don't do that. Settle the lawsuit. Right. So we don't settle litigation. And then furthermore, yeah, I mean, fear. I mean, I've already sort of talked about that. And you have to be at peace. You have to be at peace with this, notion that you could become a political prisoner.
I'll speak from experience on that part about investigative journalism. So, and I'll explain to people the formula and how it works. The people running media outlets today are businessmen. They get venture capital from big firms. They have a duty to profit. And so what happens is someone comes along and says, CEO of company, I've got this investigation. We have documents that lead us to believe this corporation has done this evil thing. Now, we've got a whistleblower on the record, but we need to get that hard confirmation. We're going to need a small team to do this. It'll take us about a year. And the businessman says, really, this will be a big story. Oh, it'll be the biggest. All right. How many people do you need? Well, me and these two reporters, you know, if I'm getting paid, you know, $70,000 a year and they're each getting paid, you know, 50 or 60, then we're going to need budget for travel. And he's going to go, okay, whoa. We're already talking about 200 grand. What's my return on this?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's for your business to decide. Can you guarantee me the story will produce fruit? No, it could turn out that we can't dig up what we need to dig up. We could spend a year on this and nothing happens. Then all of a sudden, another person walks right up to him and says, I'm going to write an article about how James O'Keefe is far right and it'll get a million clicks. And the guy goes, how much do you want? I don't know, $100. And he goes, how much do I make off it? Well, a million views. I don't know. And he goes, done.
Yeah.
That's the method right now.
Yeah. I've leaned into the most expensive thing you could possibly do. And it's like cost me $1 million to do a story.
Nice.
And I don't know how I'm going to raise the money, but we do. And there is in these lawsuits, just one more comment about this. The litigation battles I've been through is unbelievable. In the Teeter lawsuit, went to federal jury trial and won. Federal jury trial, federal court. Took us 3 years. I could have settled the case for, I don't know, 50 grand, which sounds like a lot of money, but, the cost of the litigation was $2 million. So I effectively said, go to hell. I'm not giving you 50,000. I'm going to spend $2 million on principle and won. It's just unheard of. I mean, and by the way, that's not on my Wikipedia page. That's an extraordinary, I think that's the most proud achievement at Project Veritas. We won every lawsuit.
Yeah.
Think of it. I mean, can you name any media corporation that doesn't settle lawsuits?
And you'd think that's an indication you're right.
But they don't put those facts on a Wikipedia page. They selectively edit them out. They deceptively edit them out of a Wikipedia page. Think of it. And CNN, oh, I'm sorry, the Washington Post settled litigation with Nick Sandman. That was the young guy that was with the Native American. They settled that lawsuit. Why isn't that the first sentence of the Wikipedia page?
They deceptively edit content frequently and have been called out and sued for it.
Democracy dies in darkness.
They want you to keep doing it.
But Jeff Bezos, the guy, whatever he's worth, $1 trillion now, is his most proud achievement, he wrote on the Medium, his proudest achievement was his ownership of the Washington Post. That's an extraordinary statement because the Washington Post, that woke clickbait rag, cost him whatever it was, $200 million, and he thinks that owning it is more impressive than Amazon, than you know his Dr. Evil spaceship.
Huh.
I think
that's an extraordinary admission. And it shows you how much power the Washington Post has by virtue of their relationship with Google, Twitter, and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. He's like a fitter Dr. Evil, but he kind of looks like him. And he literally made a Dr. Evil spaceship. What's up with that?
Looked like a Dr. Evil spaceship.
A wiener ship.
Sure. Yeah. Johnson.
That's an unverifiable expression of opinion.
All right. Curry says, P.S. I love you, Tim. Keep doing the Lord's work. Dave Smith for president. Zach, give him my resume.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, Dave Smith. Big fans.
Nice.
Great guy.
All right. Let's see. Mike Roach says, James, I want to help bring truth, but I only have a few more dollars than the super chat. How do I help? What's a clearer answer than hard work?
Wait, say that again. What is a clearer answer than
Mike
hard
work? Mike is asking, how does he help? What is a clearer answer than, quote, hard work?
A more clear answer than hard
Something
work.
Something more specific, maybe.
Oh. You want to help. Well, there's three things you can do. You can fight. You can go out in the field and expose them. You can fund the people who do that, or support the people who do that, or you can do nothing. Those are your three options. Mm. So think of which of those categories you want to, and you can donate $5 to this whistleblower. That's something you can do. I'm sure that's something you can afford to do. So I would say you can work for Project Veritas. We have a website, projectveritas.com. We have applications for employment. It depends upon what your passion is and what your skill set is.
This is interesting. Z Dowd says, some meds that used fetal cell lines during R&D, acetaminophen, aspirin, ibuprofen, Tylenol, Pepto-Bismol, Tums, Lipitor, right. Motrin, Exlax, Benadryl, Sudafed, Preparation H, and Claritin. Now, I can't confirm any of those, but I have heard that many of these modern medications, right, people don't realize, used fetal cell lines.
And I would submit to you that if the executives at Pepto-Bismol, if I had emails saying we need to keep this secret from our consumers, that I would report that story just like this one. And I think that it's the politicization, the obsession with which side you're on. I'm going to expose all the fraud and the deception, even at Tylenol, if I need to.
I remember I was talking to my mom, and she was like, you make a lot of videos about Democrats. And I was like, why? Did the Republicans do something I missed? And she's like, well, no, it's just always about Democrats. And I was like, well, if you got something, let me know. I mean, because I'll complain about Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham all day, but they kind of just sit on their hands.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk tough in years where they're not in power, and then they get in power.
But even in 2016, 17, 18, like, they didn't do anything.
Well, that's when they were in power. They can't. Exactly. They don't do anything when they're in power.
And I'm like, what am I complaining about? That they're garbage politicians who do nothing. The Republican Party is weak and feckless. The Democrats are constantly demanding they ban everybody's guns.
They're at war, man. And yeah, that's the thing. They're serious, whereas the Republicans aren't.
So I'm not sitting here to be like, I'm going to have a free pass to Republicans. I don't agree with their policies, but I'll tell you this. It's really easy to get conservatives to come and hang out and discuss their political beliefs. I can sit down with Glenn Beck and we can debate, you know, pro-life versus pro-choice, shake our hands, smile, and have tremendous respect for each other. I don't get that from the left. They're mostly terrified to come and talk about these political ideas.
Well, there's no principle. And the thing is, yeah, you know, if you have to resort to you're a racist, you're a sexist, you're a homophobe, in any argument that you're ever in, I mean, that trope is dead these days. It's, thank God.
All right, let's see. Free Men Die Free says, vote libertarian, LPMC, at the minimum in your state government. If you won't do it federally, do so at state level. Yep. I'm actually a big fan of that, but I think the Libertarian Party is too wacky, to be honest.
Well,
the Mises Caucus is good.
Yeah, so the National definitely is, like, nobody in the Libertarian Party is a big, well, I say nobody, most people in the Libertarian Party aren't fans of National. I mean, right now, there is a concerted effort that will probably go through this next year where the LPMC is going to go in and clean house at the national level. And I think the LPMC, I mean, I'm part of it myself. It is one of these organizations, thanks to like Mike Heiss and Dave Smith and the rest of these guys, that are done playing nice and going out and fighting instead of, you know, kind of taking these positions where they want to be liked by the left or the right in mainstream media. It's amazing.
I'm going to do a quick fact check on one of these super chats real quick. Let me just check something real quick. Maybe at the time of the super chat, but let me see. I'm looking at Twitter trends right now. I don't see it. I see Glenn Greenwald is trending and Ben Shapiro. Well, someone said you are top trending on Twitter again. I had to get your attention about it.
Veritas or you?
Veritas.
Oh.
Yeah, Jonathan Galtierini said that. Well, the problem is that Super Chat came in a while.
We were trending. Exposed Twitter was trending here today. 50,000 tweets.
Woo.
I was trending under the entertainment section. Hashtag James O'Keefe was trending under entertainment. So we keep trending on Twitter, even though I'm banned from Twitter and I'm suing Twitter for defamation.
You're doing something right. All right, let's see. The drunk conservative says James keeps smashing the oligarchy. Everyone needs to be just as brave. Do something. And have this crazy multi-spine condition that you have. P.S. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. I think you have to let go of your fear. Luke said that so eloquently in what you said. I don't know how you said that, but I'm going to take a look at that 30
seconds. I don't remember. I forget.
Just blank out.
That was a really poetic way of saying that you're liberated. There's more to life than obsessing over having approval. It's all so psychological. This is not a political issue. It's a psychological. Mm-hmm. When people ask, what can I do? What they're really asking is you know, meaning. It's kind of the pursuit of happiness versus the pursuit of meaning. Mm. The pursuit of comfort, you're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to suffer. If you do this, you will suffer. People say, what can I do? Well, welcome to suffering. Because in the journalism business, you're going to suffer. You're going to go through pain. But you're also going to have meaning in your life. And I think people have arrived at that destination now. And I've had many people in the military tell me that our war is here, like you've said today. Our war is not overseas. It is on our soil.
We've all seen The Matrix, I take it, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that guy? I think it was named Cypher. He was the guy who secretly
Did I take the blue pill?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's the guy who secretly met with the agents because he wanted to be put back in The Matrix. How do we feel about that guy?
Well, I mean,
we don't like him.
I think what you're talking about is like taking action at the end of the day in face of your fear and finding passion and finding something to really live for and believe in. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can at least lay your head down and sleep well.
Well, I bring up this character because, you know, all these characters are woken up to how the real world is. They were in the soft comfort of the Matrix living a lie. With the blue pill.
Right. Yep.
This guy eventually says, I don't want to live this way. It's too hard. Put me back in the machine. And you know what? Ignorance is bliss.
Right.
And that's the reality. When you wake up to what's going on, whatever euphemism or whatever you want to call it, red pill or, you know, whatever, there's going to be a lot of struggle.
Yes.
You are going to take charge of your life. You are going to take risks and it'll be a struggle. But for me, I would not want to be in the Matrix.
Survive this abuse, as a muckraker over time, I think you develop a new kind of superpower. Just like any survivor of any form of abuse, you are no longer a slave to fear. You're invigorated by the knowledge that you're no longer a slave to fear. And suffering, too, can make you a better version of yourself. So you're right, Tim. I think it is like the Matrix. I think it's easy to comply. I have one of my close friends is... He's the sort of guy that believes he's my friend. You believe it or not, people's friendships are ruined by this day and age. But I still maintain a very close friend who believes what he sees on CNN, and he got his vaccine. I got my booster shot. I got my second booster shot. They just love the compliance. It makes them feel safe.
Yeah,
it makes them feel happy. Ignorance is bliss, right?
Yep.
Compliance is easy.
Well, my friends, go to timcast.com, become a member, because we will have a members-only segment coming up around 11 or so p.m. And don't forget to smash the like button here. You can follow me at Timcast. You can follow the show at TimcastIRL. Share the show with your friends. It's like what James is saying, you know, if everybody is sharing, then we have more marketing power than CNN could ever dream of. So if every single person right now shared this show, it would reach everybody. Okay, figuratively. But before we go, James, did you want to shout anything out? I think you got a new book, right?
Yeah, the book's called American Muckraker. It's not out till January, but it's on pre-order now on Bezos' website, Amazon. Bezos thinks his ownership of the Washington Post is more interesting. That's interesting. But buy the book, American Muckraker. All proceeds go to Project Veritas. And, of course, if you're on the inside and you're seeing theft, fraud, or deception – contact us at veritastips@protonmail.com. We'll send you a hidden camera and make your colleagues and supervisors internet celebrities. veritastips@protonmail.com.
Shane, did you want to shout anything out?
Sure, yeah. RadicalPod.com is my show. It's where you'll find all the links. Shane T. Hazel on Twitter. And I'll tell you, we're going to do some very interesting things for this governor election down here in Georgia. So if you guys want to follow that, get involved. We're going to do some things a little bit differently in terms of funding because, let's face it, you know, being bought and paid for is kind of a cliche thing these days. We're going to do self-funding. So to help me divorce myself from everything else, you can find the donations and the Patreon accounts there on RadicalPod.com.
Let's also not forget, when you let go of fear, you have a lot more fun and you have a lot more meaning. I also wanted to add that to the bait. Shouts out to Ian. He's not here, but if you want to follow him, you can at Ian Crossland. My website that I have way too much fun on is LukeUncensored.com. LukeUncensored.com. We just released members-only merchandise and t-shirts available only on LukeUncensored.com. Hope to see you there later on today.
I'm going to have to check out LukeUncensored.com now. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight. Thank you all for your super chats. I know we weren't able to get to everything, but we really appreciate it. And I know, really glad that Project Veritas was able to get their message out a little bit. And Shane was able to get his message out, too, about running in Georgia. You guys are welcome to follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids.
We will see all of you over at TimCast.com in the members segment. Thanks for hanging out.